Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon from the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Very big show we have for you today. We're going to be talking, of course, about some updates to the war in Iran. Iran feeling very confident about its immediate and even long-term future. This in addition to some developments in Ukraine. Basically, two different NATO allies have been attacked in the last 24 hours. Israel attacked Turkey, and Ukraine attacked Greece. Greece and Turkey, both NATO allies, Ukraine and Israel, both not. Kind of interesting, but I don't expect Article 5 to be invoked anytime soon. We're also going to be talking about the deliberate shutdown of the beef industry here in America, that's seeing entire packing plants close, which is funny because I thought that was why we had to keep all the illegal immigrants. But we'll get into all of that and more. We'll start the first hour with an interview between me and Joel Webben. We'll really kind of continue the conversation he was just having with Alex Jones. I was taking notes, and we'll sort of pick up where they left off. But first, here's a report. Of course, you can find it at alexjoneslive.com. Follow us on X at Real Alex Jones. I'm at Harrison H. Smith, and we'll be right back with Joel Webben. But first, the latest from John Baum.
Bill Gates just handed us the next chapter of the globalist eugenicist perfect storm playbook on a silver platter.
Water shortages could be the biggest mass mortality event the world has ever seen. I am talking billions of people dying.
What the?
The only way we ensure people remain safe is by being invested in the United States Water Reserve.
Pair that with his well-documented purchases of farmland and water rights across the American West.
You're reporting Bill Gates started buying land in 2013 through a web of limited liability shell companies across the country. Tell us what he's got.
I mean, there is a lot of land, and it's over about 18 different states, right? So we're talking about 70,000 acres in North Louisiana, around the Delta region, 14,000 acres in Florida, over 40,000 acres in Arkansas, over 14,000 acres in Washington. So it really just spans the country, and it is a lot of land. Local farmers I spoke to in South Georgia and North Florida said that he's doing the same thing that Big Ag did before he got there, which is using a lot of fertilizer that leaches into the rivers, causes big algae blooms, and actually is very ruinous for the habitats of manatees and fish.
Plus the exploding thirst of AI data centers that are draining aquifers dry, and the pattern snaps into focus. Manufacture the crisis, control the supply, and thin the herd under the banner of saving the planet.
The animals that can eat grass have very unusual stomachs that have these bacteria that are methanogenic in there. And so they leak natural gas both out the front and the back. And so people have said, well, let's change the hay or throw some things in there. And it's been, nobody knows how to get rid of.
No one knows how to get cows to stop farting.
Exactly.
This is the same oligarch who spent years pushing experimental injections.
If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus.
How ready was the world for this, say on a scale of 1 to 10, and how about the U.S.?
The U.S. gets a low score.
Now positioning himself as the gatekeeper of the one resource no human can live without for more than a few days.
My name is Doug Seavey. I build data centers. I own data centers. I built the first private data center in the state of Iowa. And everything that Google is telling you is BS.
Hi, I'm Ben Townsend. I lead infrastructure strategy and sustainability here at Google. Google's helping foster a new era of technological progress, and we are committed to doing so responsibly. You probably already know that data centers need energy to operate, but you might be surprised to learn that they generate heat and often rely on water for cooling. At Google, we understood early on that as the use of digital services grew, so too would the need for water to cool data centers. That's why we set out to find a responsible, sustainable way to manage this vital resource.
I have a data center right now that's running in Hiawatha, and I have been there 14 years and have never used 1 gallon of water. What Google isn't telling you is they don't want to use the technology because it costs more. They're going to burn through the water.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy
1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with minbenazole, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenazole is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenazole studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
And this is The War Room Live. I'm joined in person by Joel Webbin. You, of course, can follow him on X at Joel Webbin. He's the founder of NXR Studios, which I'm happy enough to do a show for once a week, Off Limits.
We are so honored, Harrison. Your show is fantastic, by the way.
Well, thank you.
You have... they all get a lot of views, but the comments are usually like 50-50. It's like, this is so good, and also, Joel, I hate you, and I hope you die. But yours is like a 90-10 ratio of positive, positive comments.
It's been very nice. You. Well, it's been great, because obviously, doing a show daily, it's just this constant deluge of news. So I sort of like the idea of, I'll do a once-a-week show that's 1 hour where I can just sort of compact all these thoughts I have that maybe there's not a time for during the day. So it's been very fun to do. And of course, when you asked, and I had to say, look, InfoWars always comes first.
Right.
If there's ever a conflict.
I knew.
I'm sorry. But
if I was straight up trying to poach you, I think Alex Jones would kill me. So I knew better than to do that. Yeah.
But it's been absolutely fantastic. The content is fantastic. We did a great roundtable with myself and Dale Partridge and Calvin Robinson and yourself. And it was great just like being in person.
And that's four parts. The first one released a few weeks ago, but then we had some other ones that we wanted to show. That's the Wednesday show. We call it the NXR special. But it's actually a four-part series. We've only aired the first one. The other three are going to be coming out in the next few weeks. And you're right. That discussion between all of us was awesome.
It was very exciting, very fun. And it's just there's something about being in person that's so much more valuable than being online, which, of course, goes directly to this giant event that we're all doing November 12th through 14th in Dallas, Texas, Christ is King, America After Trump, 3-day conference. I'm so excited for this. Like Alex, I'm already preparing my speech and thinking, what do I want to talk about? It's going to be a huge event overall. And of course, people can go to newchristianright.com/conference, use the promo code Harrison, all caps, Harrison. No, you can also use Alex Jones. All caps Fishback.
Yeah, so Alex Jones is 20% off. All caps, one word. Harrison is also all caps, one word, is 20% off. But today, the big one we wanted to push, in light of it being it's the primary GOP election day right now in Florida. And Fishback, here's the deal. Whether he wins or loses, he has changed the game. He's a canary in the coal mine. He's the prototype, I think, for a new younger, but not just younger for the sake of being younger. Who cares about that? But somebody who is unapologetic, and so clear in his Christian faith, and being, pro-life against, he's called abortion murder. He says he's going to shut down all 53 abortion clinics in the state of Florida. He signed a legal document that actually binds him to his campaign promises, all these kinds of things. And so James Fishback, today is the election in Florida. And I'm going to be honest, it's entirely possible that he loses. First and foremost, though, we don't need to start hedging our bets when the votes are still coming in. So first, if you're in Florida, if you are a Christian, if you're a Christian nationalist, if you're an American patriot, if you care about the country, you care about the state of Florida, get your butt out and vote for Fishback. James Fishback, vote for him in Florida. That's first. But second, even if he doesn't win, right? Cause it's David versus Goliath. Byron Donalds, I think it's like close to 60 million war chests. He's got the Miriam Adelson funds. He's got, Trump. And you know,
Trump's endorsed him 3 times.
Correct. And that shows desperation, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
You know that he's, picking up the phone and begging, like, Trump, please come out and endorse me again because this young guy Fishback is kicking my butt because I actually kind of suck and everybody knows it and I'm a DEI hire and, all those kinds of things. But the fact still remains Florida has, in terms of per capita for the nation, is the most boomers. You know, and they're going to tend to go with just MAGA and Trump's endorsement, those kinds of things. Plus, there's nothing that swells the heart of a boomer more than a black man who actually has a decent haircut, you know, and a well-trimmed right. beard. And, you know, and they're like, because boomers at the end of the day, when they lay their head on the pillow at night, that's their greatest claim to fame is we're not racist, you know.
Right.
So there is a temptation, you know, for them just to go with Byron because he's well-trimmed
sort of
black guy and he has Trump's endorsement and all those kinds of things. So because there's so many in Florida, James, he doesn't have nearly the funding that Byron does. And so it really is David versus Goliath. But first, let's vote for him. Let's actually vote for Fishback because he actually can win. I've seen some of the inside polls that's polling some of the early voting. And from what I've seen, there is the possibility that he could only be 4.5 or 5 points down. And today, actually, he really could win. Vote Fishback. Many people in my church are literally praying and fasting, like the church-wide fasting and praying that God would use him and that he would win. But my point is this, and it's not to hedge my bet, it's just to state a fact. Even if he loses, if all the haters are right and Fishback comes in at 3%, 5%, you know, whatever, then yeah, I'm gonna eat some humble pie. But if he comes in, even if he loses, if it's over 20%, people will be studying the Fishback campaign
100%.
For years.
And they already should be because clearly his social media presence, the way he gets people out to events, it is truly astonishing. Like, and this is one of those things where I go, if I'm just looking at X, it's like it's James Fishback all day, every day. I mean, right. He's doing all these
events. It's incredible.
And I mean, he's showing up. It's
like 15 events a day.
And like at 2 o'clock in the morning, he's got 100 people, you know, outside some university.
Or 200 or 300 people. And I can
amazing.
Say firsthand experience. So I had the distinct pleasure, James, you know, he gave me a call and said, Joel, I want to do something a little bit different. He was like, I forget what it was called. Antonio, you might know, but it was like the Sundown event or something like that. Some kind of Republican event that he was supposed to be a part of. And then they reneged his invitation
right.
because he doesn't worship. He's never kissed the wall in Israel or something like that. But they reneged his invitation. And so he went up the road and held like a counter rally.
Right.
And he invited me to do it. And this speaks to his character as not just a politician, who cares about that, but as a Christian, he said, I want Joel to come, and I'm picking him not despite this, but because Joel's a pastor, and he let me preach a sermon. I started by saying, this is a political rally. Who's doing this? Trump didn't even do this. Even right. 2015 Trump energy did not do this. He let me stand up, and I started with, please stand for the reading of God's word. And I read a passage from Joshua about being strong, courageous, and I literally preached a like 20, 25-minute sermon, and then we welcomed Fishback, and he did the Q&A on the spot because he's so good on the fly, and he just did it for like 2 hours, and then he was on to another event. But my point is, I was there in person. The room was packed. There was probably 400 or 500 people, and this is not something that they were planning, like our conference. I hope by God's grace that we can have, I think we're going to have a couple thousand people and sell out, especially now that we've got Alex Jones. But this is something we've been planning for a few months. You've been helping me promote.
Anybody that's ever tried to organize anything, getting 100 people
to a
single area is like...
Exactly. He did this in a matter of days.
Amazing. Yeah.
Incredible.
And so there's got to be, there's something there, and there's something compelling people to go out and see him. Whether that translates into electoral, you know, success or not, I guess we'll wait
to see.
But it's sort of, at this point, it's hard to sort of get your grips on anything. Because I felt the same way about Thomas Massie, where it's like, there's no way this other dude who's never had an event and never done a debate and has no, you know, legitimate, authentic groundswell support, there's no way he can be Thomas Massie, who won from 80% of his district, even after Trump had, you know, sort of proved the other guy later or earlier than the most recent race. So I have a hard time even, like, figuring out, getting my finger on the pulse. And
I know
figuring
it's
out
hard to see what's real because I understand that Twitter's not real life. I get that. At the same time, I also think that there's a sense in which social media does syndicate and give you a snapshot of real life. So like, you don't want to live your life on Twitter and, you know, the algorithm speaks for God and that's retarded. But at the same time, to pretend that, that somebody like James Fishback that has motion, as the kids would say, and is turning out crowds and you see, you know, the live streams and the pictures and all that, to say that none of that is real and that it's all fabricated. Well, that you're kidding yourself. That's some Byron Donald's copium.
It's also like, imagine the mindset of the Republicans at the top who see the energy, they see the youthful energy. You know, how are you not sitting there thinking, wow, this is something we really need to, you know, capture for ourselves.
Right.
This is something we need to make hay out
capitalize.
Of because clearly, yeah, capitalize on, exactly. Because clearly they have to recognize that they're strongest demographic is literally dying out. They're aging out. So you have to get the youth. Obviously, this James Fishback guy, he seized on something that the youth resonates with. And yet from the establishment, you get nothing but disdain and dirty tricks and, you know, really hatred of the guy.
And if Democrats hate Fishback because, you know, he's conservative and he's right wing, you know, he's Christian and he, you know, wants to shut down abortion clinics, and that makes sense. But people on the right, there's more vitriol for Fishback on the right than there is a left.
Yeah.
And these guys are being retarded because what they need to recognize is very similar kind of to a 2015 Trump-esque kind of momentum. Fishback is inevitable. It's not a matter of if, it's simply a matter of when. He may not win this election, although I think it's possible. Get out and vote for Fishback today in Florida. But if he doesn't win, here's the deal. It's just a matter of the timing, when, W-H-E-N, not if. Fishback is young. He's got charisma. He's not going anywhere. But this Byron Donalds kind of voter class that he can depend on, they are going somewhere. They're going 6 feet under, right? They've got 10 to 20 years left, and Fishback will be, the typecast. He is the mold. He's the prototype, the blueprint of what I hope and pray and what I actually think is inevitable that the GOP will become, both the left and the right, they're not actually meeting in the center. That's a lie. There can be no fellowship between light and darkness, right? There was a moment where some guys on the right were saying, oh, maybe we, you know, bipartisan, we can band together the left and right against Israel. That being critical of Israel is not enough for a political movement. Mossad, I have some big problems with, as you know. But Mossad is not the greatest threat in a day-to-day scenario for my five children, my wife. You know who is? My leftist blue-haired feminist neighbor with a Tallarico sign in her front yard. Because that person, if they discover, you know, my home address and they know what my children look like, and they're the type of person who'll run over one of my kids with their car. They're crazy.
Yeah.
They're absolutely crazy. We've got women. Oh, that's hyperbolic. Oh, did a woman just strangle her three kids or not? I don't think I'm exaggerating that much.
Well, it's not just the strangling the kids. It's the fact that she's got $1 million of support and all these people.
Just like Carmelo Anthony.
Anthony, yeah.
Yeah, it was the same thing. He got all this support. And so my point is just to say that what we see happening is it's not that the left and right are coming together. The new evolution of the right and the new evolution of the left will both be somewhat center. It's actually the opposite. It's Fishback on the right, Mondami on the left. They're actually both getting more extreme. It's going to be communism versus nationalism.
Yeah, and the people promoting the traditional conservative, neoconservative position are really doing a service for the radical leftists.
Right.
By trying everything they can to stop people from voting for people like Fishback, who are farther on the right. But nothing he says is outrageous. Nothing he says is radical.
Nope.
What he says is unique, and it's, you know, very interesting hearing a modern politician say some of this stuff, but it's all very kind of common sense at the end of the day.
And doesn't it remind you, like, I understand there are degrees of scale, but in looking at the principle, right, not the degree, but the principle, the category, it really, like, Fishback, there's no one else that he reminds me of than Trump. That's like holding all these rallies, the energy, the excitement, saying some bombastic things that aren't, in principle, are not extreme. They're not dangerous. They're not even that transgressive, but it's still something that your average politician would never say, you know, like
right.
Trump, like with Hillary, that's because you'd be in jail, you know, and Fishback having some of those quips and the quick on his feet and the one-liners and the courage and not backing down, unapologetic. It reminds me of that kind of Trumpian figure that changed the political game. And I think that the political game is going to be changed again by Fishback. And Politico, my friend Antonio, he's one of my co-hosts, he just told me today, this afternoon, that Politico, I think, just published an article today saying that James Fishback is changing, forever changed the political landscape already.
And that's my question. I guess as you were talking, I was thinking, okay, what they're going to do is try to clone Fishback. They're going to try to mimic Fishback's energy and sort of his strategy if they can just temper some of the messages that he has. Because again, I just am thinking, if I'm the Republican, even if I'm purely motivated on my own power and my own self-aggrandizement, I would look at Fishback and go, oh, we got to get this guy on Fox. We got to get this guy in our camp. We got to co-opt some of that energy to us. But they're not doing that. So clearly it's more important to them to maintain this firewall of ideological purity than it is to win, or than
that's
it is to get
so
victory.
True. That's such a good point.
is really that's what we got to get over, and we got to actually embrace people like James Fishback if we want to, if we want anybody from the Republican Party to win in the future.
That's so true. Yeah, that's a great point. I love how you said that, that at the end of the day, right, the purpose of a system is what it does. Right. You could even say the purpose of a man is what he does. It doesn't seem like the purpose is winning. Right. Because if it was winning, they'd say, all right, let's get behind it. I mean, 99% of things we agree, you know, he's pro-life, all the things that we say we care about. He's actually for those things. Except the, in the case of Fishback, it seems like there's maybe one thing that they disagree on, which is support for
this
a foreign.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So that makes you think maybe it's not about winning. Maybe it's not actually about saving the unborn child in their mother's womb or any, maybe it really is just using America as a tax farm for a foreign interest.
I mean, and that is sort of the way that it goes. And you know that the, one of the, you know, the reason why Israel gets everything it wants in our Congress right now is because you might have people with very differing views, but there's sort of a filtering process that says, well, you have to align on this one thing. And you can be pro-abortion, anti-abortion. Doesn't really matter to us. Doesn't matter to AIPAC what you think about those things. What matters is what you think about Israel. And so the, it actually makes sense for the individual to go, well, I got 100 different issues. Maybe I'm not totally on board the Israel thing, but I can sacrifice one of my issues to serve the 99. That's the calculus that goes on in the candidate's head. And so at the end of the day, what you're left with is all these people with all these varying views that all just so happen to align on this one issue. So there, it, it's sort of like what James Fishback is doing is the inverse of that, where he's got all
yes.
the right ideas, but he's not right on Israel, so he has to be thrown out.
Absolutely. Real quick on the Fishback thing, this is something I put out a video. I don't know if you watched it, but, I was going up to, on Thursday nights, we do like, a training for men in our church, like deep theological training. We're like Calvin's Institutes and like really heady stuff. But it's awesome because the men are great and we talk about life and we talk about the Bible, all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if it was the Holy Spirit or what, but I was like, I got to do a video for Fishback. I had this idea. So I went up to the church early, cause it's really hard to record at home. My home is very loud with my family. So I went, just a few minutes early and I went into the sanctuary of our church and I did this little 5-minute video where I talked about, you know, that a vote for Collins or a vote for, you know, Renner, and Paul Renner is, I think he's pretty good. I don't think he's terrible. Or, you know, I don't have any ill will. Or like he would be absolutely terrible. But he can't win. And,
right.
and Jay Collins can't either. And I like Renner better than Collins, but I like Fishback the most. And he also, he's clearly the second runner. If Byron is first, then Fishback has the best chance of beating him. And so I talked about like vote for Renner or vote for Collins is a vote for Byron because, you're sucking away the momentum and the energy and the votes from Fishback. And he's the only one who can actually beat him. And a vote for, you know, one of these other guys, third and fourth runners, a vote for Byron. A vote for Byron is in many ways a vote for a Democrat. One, because I think that Byron kind of is a little bit like a Democrat. I could make that argument. But number two, a lot of these polls, I don't know if you've seen them, but some of these polls predicting not the primary, but the general actually point towards Fishback being one of the only guys out of this 4-man race that could beat the Democrat, whereas Byron actually goes down to Jolly. Have you seen some of those?
Yeah. And I watched that video and I retweeted that video. We played
yeah,
the video on War Room. It was a great video. And I think it was a great point. And again, I think, you know, we have to prove ourselves here. And James Fishback is a big litmus test, a big bellwether of, you know, how successful this type of candidate will be. Obviously, there's been some not very successful ones, people like Casey Putsch, and there's this big sort of scandal at that time of, well, do we support him or not? My whole thing has kind of been, I'm going to support anybody that is on our side and has our ideas and is running, because I want people out there trying to shift the needle.
I so appreciate that, Harrison. And just for the record, I get both sides. And I'll just say it, because there's nothing to hide. Like, he knows what he said. He knows who we're talking about. You are a friend. I really appreciate you. Nick Fuentes is a friend, and I really appreciate him.
Hey, and happy birthday, Nick, by
the
way.
Oh, it's his birthday. You're right.
Apparently, it's his birthday.
Hey, if you want to give Nick Fuentes a birthday present, then vote for Fishback.
There you go.
Because he would appreciate it. But here's my point in bringing up Nick. My point in bringing up Nick is to say that you, and I gravitate more towards your position personally. But I understand the principle and the strategy of Nick's position, so I'm not going to disparage it. You're saying, look, we don't want to discourage any of our guys who are good guys from taking power because we don't want them to, out of cowardice, to just be apathetic and passive and nobody tries for anything.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, I understand Nick. I don't think this should be the average guy strategy. But I do make the exception and see how it's reasonable for Nick because
yeah.
so much is riding on him. Right? I mean, he was like person of the year, New York, the Times, you know, person of the year. And everybody would love to say, see, look, Nick, it's none of it's real life. It's all a joke. It's just clicks from, you know, third world countries online and, you know, blah, blah. But when it actually comes to on the ground, Nick endorsed so-and-so like a Casey Putsch or this person or that. And I liked Casey. Right.
Yeah, I like him. Like, too, yeah.
And so we had Casey on the show. But Fishback we've had on 7 times and there's a reason for that. So I think Casey's a great guy. We had him on the show once. But in the case of Fishback, we've had on 7 times and I have endorsed, Fishback in a very clear way. I didn't campaign in Ohio for Casey, but I did campaign on the ground, with Fishback. And I think Nick is just, he's saying that. He's saying, look, to put the America First label, the Nick Fuentes, the Groyper, whatever, Nick has not really put that on anybody because he knows the second that he does that, he officially endorses someone. If they come in at 10%, 8%, 5%, then he's a laughingstock. And everyone's going to, exactly, they're going to point to him. Not just saying you're illegitimate, but they're going to say Nick is actually the reason they lost. They perform so poorly. And then all of a sudden he has a scarlet letter A, an albatross around his neck, and his entire movement is hamstrung. And so my point though is Nick has not come out and formally endorsed hardly anyone. He did that yesterday.
Yeah.
For like the first time in regards to Fishback. And here's the thing. I think it's one because Fishback is a serious candidate. But number two, Nick is not stupid. If Nick did that, it's because Fishback actually could win. So one more time, I got to say, get out and vote. You have till 7 p.m. Eastern time in the state of Florida. If you're a Florida resident, get out and vote for Fishback. And the whole point of bringing up, you know, the whole Jay Collins and Paul Renner thing is to say, if you vote for one of them, I'm telling you, you're siphoning away from the one guy who could actually beat Byron Donald. So even if you don't particularly like Fishback, but you at least agree that Byron Donalds would be a disaster, then you can't vote for Collins and you can't vote for Renner. You got to vote for Fishback. And so vote for him. Second, use all caps, one word, promo code Fishback, and you will get, and this is only for today, right? So voting boost, vote Fishback. That ends at 7 p.m. Eastern time. But at 12 a.m. Pacific time, this promo code, it's only for today, ends. It's newchristianright.com/conference, newchristianright.com/conference, promo code Fishback, all caps, for 40% off. It's going to take it from, I think our regular price is like $250 for a 3-day pack conference, takes you down to $150, almost all the way down to the early bird price, but that's only for today.
And the number of speakers, of course, our audience is well familiar with most of them, including myself, J.P. Sears, Fishback will be there. Calvin Robinson's incredible, and he's been a fixture on the online right for a while. You've got Alex Stein. Did I mention Alex Stein already? I'll mention him again. Dale Partridge, yourself. I mean, and of course, Alex Jones. I mean, this is a very full lineup, and we'll be hanging out, answering questions. And
but with Alex Stein, it's like, why have Alex Stein? Well, my first answer is this. Because he's my friend.
Yeah.
Well, he's incredibly kind. I had the pleasure of meeting him and it wasn't doing a public thing. It was actually behind the scenes and we bumped into each other and he approached me. He was, you know, little old me and he was just so kind and generous. And
he's very much like Alex Jones where like who he is in the public perception is exactly who he is behind the scenes. There's no act being put on.
And then he just, you know, like would text me from now and then or give me a phone call, just encourage me. One of the most encouraging people that I've met. So one,
he's the best, yeah.
I like Alex Stein. And two, nobody at this conference is the Pope. Nobody is a saint, including myself. But the bar is that, that they've at least made a public profession of Christ. Alex Stein is the name, but he is, a professing Christian. He believes in Jesus. And then lastly, I have to say, it may be every single time, but it's not every single Stein.
we prove it with Alex Stein himself.
And we appreciate Alex. Yeah.
I tell you what, can you stay for a little longer or you got it?
Sure. So I actually have to catch a flight, in a little bit, but I've got another 20 minutes or so.
Okay. We're going to do 20 more minutes with Joel Webbin. Go now, newchristianright.com/conference. That's newchristianright.com/conference. Fishback, all caps, one word, 40% off today only. We'll be back in a few minutes with more. Stay with us.
I don't have to sell you on bovine colostrum. Almost everybody knows for decades and decades, doctors recommend it to patients. It's been all the rage. It's the first 2 weeks of milk that come from a cow or any other mammal. It's not normal milk. It's not white. It's clear. It's full of all these peptides and amino acids and growth factors and things that literally accelerate tissue repair, and so much more. But the issue is our bovine colostrum is a private label of the top rated brand in the country. They let us put our label on it, and we sell it for a little bit less than it's sold in stores. And then you're funding our operation. It's a total 360 win. But here's where I dropped the ball. I've been promoting this bovine colostrum for almost a year since our sponsor, Big Lee, came out with it. And I just basically talk about, hey, it's great for your hair, great for your skin, you know, great for all of that. But that's just what you see on the surface. Yeah, your fingernails are thicker. They grow quicker. Women, you know, since the 60s have been taking it. But if it's doing that to the outside, what is it doing to the inside? So I wanted to just read some of the things that's in bovine colostrum and explain to you how ours is 4 times stronger than the average stuff on the market and at least twice as strong as leading competitors. It's cold pressed. It's never been homogenized either or boiled or heated up to 250 degrees. So it keeps the cofactors alive. It's super concentrated. One little scoop from the powder is your daily intake, and it's amazing. But now our sponsors come out with these great naturally flavored grape gummies that has a full day concentrated allowance in each gummy. So let me now read to you just some of the ingredients and what it does. The vast majority of colostrum products, again, are flavorless, but the key is they are only 10 to 20% IgG. Ours is 40% IgG. That's double to quadruple the potency of the competitors. And it's a delicious, all-natural, grape-flavored gummy. So it habituates it. People love it and want to keep taking it. Immune Health IgG and Lactoferrin Defense. IgG immunoglobulins are the body's primary antibody defense. Colostrum's natural lactoferrin is a potent antimicrobial protein that binds iron and inhibits pathogen growth. Together, they prime and strengthen the immune system year-round, starting with the gut, and it's good for all the rest of the body and the organs. Gut support integrity. Colostrum contains growth factors IGF-1 and EGF. These help repair and maintain the gut lining. This makes it especially valuable for anyone dealing with leaky gut, digestive discomfort, or looking to optimize nutrient absorption. It's great for young people, but really essential for old folks. Because as you get older, the gut absorbs less and less. The bioactive peptides and growth factors in colostrum support faster tissue repair and lean muscle recovery after exercise, making these gummies a smart addition to any active lifestyle or fitness routine. And again, this is a 40% concentration. You're not going to find that anywhere else. Each gummy is 600 milligram concentrate of the highest quality bovine colostrum. That's not some little petty dose. That is a big dose that will give you big results. And of course, the colostrum are from good old cows right here in the USA. Ladies and gentlemen, if you love the powder, you're going to love the gummies. It's an incredible product. What it does for you internally is even bigger than what it does for your hair, your nails, and your skin. So get the powder and get the great gummies right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Keep us on the air. Be healthier. Have a better life. A true 360 win. Thank you for your support. And the gummies are discounted for a limited time out of the gates. Again, at thealexjonesstore.com.
Who took the bomb? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio by Joel Webbin. You can follow him on X at Joel Webbin. That's J-O-E-L-W-E-B-B-O-N. And of course, you can go to newchristianright.com/conference. Christ is King. America After Trump is the name of the 3-day conference that we will be putting on. Alex will be speaking there. I will be speaking there. J.P. Sears, Joel Webbin, just an absolutely all-star lineup.
And James Fishback.
And James Fishback, of course, who is, today's today. Today's election day in Florida. So if you're just tuning in, you're in Florida, what are you doing? Go vote. You've got to vote now for James Fishback. I wonder what the numbers are because, primary. It's this whole political paradigm is so new to me. I mean, people used to not know what primaries were, you know? Now it's this whole cultural movement thing.
Which it is good that people are starting to care. And I'm one of those people.
Yeah. Right?
It's not like, you know, if you talked to me 10 years ago about politics, much less, you know, primaries, and I'd be like, huh? You know,
yeah, right.
But now I actually care. But in terms of the numbers, I don't know if this is specifically what you were getting at, but if you look back at like 2022, which I think is a good litmus test. So that was another midterm election. This would be DeSantis going up for second term at that time, 2022 in the state of Florida. We actually have a lower turnout with the early voting so far in 26 than we had in 22, which is kind of crazy because you would expect, if anything, for there to be more turnout because in 22 you had the incumbent. But it's actually lower. So even if Byron gets it by default because he's had three Trump, you know, endorsements, he's got the Merriam Adelson money, you know, all that kind of this, who Merriam Adelson is also who, you know, supported and funded, the opponent of Thomas Massie and got him unseated. Yeah. And so, even though he is the front runner, he's who's slated to win, the polls from what I've seen on the ground from the early voting are actually really close. Like James actually could win. He's a lot closer than people are admitting. It seems like some of the stuff is even being suppressed, but because the turnout is so low, I think it was like 800,000, something like 830,000, something like that for all of the early voting. And if you look at 2022 in Florida, the primary, it was 53% of the total vote for that midterm election came in as early voting, and then 47 came in day of. And so if you look at that, with 800 whatever thousand it is so far with the early voting for Florida, if today is the day of election day is slightly less than that, and then you're looking at like a 1.5 to 1.6 million total votes cast, which means James Fishback, if Paul Renner and Jay Collins combined get about 30% of the vote, which leaves 70 split between Byron and James, then James needs to get, you know, like 35.5%, you know, he needs to get just a little over 35%. What that would translate to is about 550 to 600,000 votes. Maybe he could even win with 540,000 votes. And when you think of that, like Monty Fritz, I really liked him in Tennessee. I think he came in third place, but he was Christian nationalist. He's a man of God. He loves the Lord. I got to talk to him behind the scenes, and we did not endorse him in the way that we have Fishback. We've had Fishback on the show 7 times. I got to be on the ground rallying with him. But Florida, just numerically, the population is 3 times the size of Tennessee. And Fishback is a workhorse. He's a machine. He's doing, you know, multiple events every single day and has been doing it for months and months and months and months. I guarantee you nationwide and in Florida, more people know the name Fishback than those in Tennessee who knew the name Monty Fritz. And that's not to cast shade on Monty, but Fishback is just a machine. So my point is, with Florida having 3 times the population and Fishback running at the speed of light with his campaign, all he has to do, Monty got, I think it was like somewhere between 180 and 250,000 votes. And with 1.6 million total votes projected for this Florida race, Fishback needing about 550,000 of those, it means that he would only really have to get about 2.5x what Monty got in a state 3 times the size with a campaign that has been so vocal and so loud. And so my point is, he may not win, but this is not over till it's over. It is possible.
It's very doable.
It's very doable.
It's very doable. Now, just the term Christian nationalism. Can we talk about that for a second? Because I feel like it's such a loaded term. I feel like it's being defined by enemies of Christian nationalism. They like to tell people, you know, the Senate candidate here, James Tallarico, has made it a cornerstone of his campaign to inform people about the dangers of Christian nationalism, which he essentially is warning people about the dangers of, like, Nazism.
Yes.
They're basically equating these two things, which is ridiculous, but it's because our enemies are defining this term for us.
Our enemies are conflating Christian nationalism with white ethno-nationalism.
Right.
And you know my views on this, Harrison. We've talked about it offline. There he is.
Wins or loses, he's a real star. We move the ball down the field.
That's right.
Giving up is how we, whether he wins or loses, doesn't matter. Name recognition, we're building the future. Just like Ron Paul and Trump, we just keep moving on. I don't mean to interrupt, just listening here.
No.
Classic thing.
This is a dream. It's a dream come true. I've watched Alex Jones. I've watched Alex Jones pop in and bomb a stream so many times.
Tim Pool is working for Netanyahu.
Save me, Tim Pool.
And now I'm actually a part of it. This is amazing.
Oh, Tim Pool's now playing total victim. saying he lost a friend. He doesn't know why this happened. He's trying to be nice to Tim Pool. I'm just sick of the fakeness.
Call him. Call him. You guys, you got to kiss and make up.
The reason I'm mad is I'm tired of his fakeness.
I understand you being mad, but you guys should talk. You should talk.
He wants me to lovingly, like as a clown, for charity.
Charity boxing match.
Shoot. No. We're going to shoot. No, I'll light the fuse. We're going to shoot him out of a cannon.
Oh.
Yeah, it'll only shoot like 500 yards.
He'll be
safe because he's got the beanie. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
I'm proud of the fact that he's an Orthodox Jew, but the fact is that beanie
he's not.
That beanie is the cover. No.
No, what is Tim's agnostic, right?
I think so, yeah.
The point is the beanie, I'm proud of it, actually.
Oh, you think it's hiding a kippah.
The truth is he's the illegitimate son of Netanyahu.
All right.
And the beanie is actually a way to hide. I'm proud of him.
Tim Pool, if you can hear me.
He's just like Ben Shapiro.
I don't hate you. Have me on your show.
You know Ben Shapiro was
I'll mediate.
He was for genetically modified fraternal twins.
Ben Shapiro, over the years, you can watch his kippah getting bigger and bigger.
Just like his eyebrows. Yeah.
But it's not as big as Ben Shapiro's. Tim Pool's beanie.
All right.
No, it's a fedora. I'm proud of it. Hey, don't be bigoted towards Tim Pool.
No, of course.
Look, if you were the son of...
Alex Jones is Tim Pool's biggest fan, right?
If you were the son of
Benjamin Netanyahu,
keep it under wraps as well.
Till the right time.
I didn't mean to invade. I apologize.
No, that's fine.
I was around the corner like Schmeagle.
No, that's a classic Alex Jones move. Just bombing into the stream. I've literally watched it happen with Owen. I've watched it happen with you, and I get to be a part of it.
It's great.
It's like Michael Scott, like an inside joke. I've always wanted to be a part of one. And here it is. Yeah, here it is. I get to be a part.
No, but the point you're making about James Fishback, I mean, it's exactly right, which is what we were saying about Casey Putsch. It's like, because when I see somebody, you know, they see how things are going, they go, maybe I'll run for office. The thing I don't want them to think is, man, if I run for office and I don't win, everybody on the right is going to hate me now and start trying to tear me down. It's like, if you're running and you're trying, even if you fail, man, we got your back. And that's what the left does too. The left.
They do.
The left. Save me, Quartering. Save me, Tim Pool.
Oh, here comes that. Yo. Die, Nazi. Die. Sorry.
Very
this was literally the debate. This was the debate. I think August 31st. No, dude, I thought it was. I knew you would talk, but I did not know that you would be out of your seat for a third of the debate. Like literally, Brandon Straka is like, we've got to belt him down to the seat. You know, like, it was pretty amazing. It was pretty fun.
He loved it. Brandon Straka.
When I have guests on, they're actually smart. I shut up. It was nonstop horse crap.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
It's going
to
be
When's
awesome.
That coming out?
I think
next
they're going to do it,
right?
Alex.
Like
they're going to do a part one and part two because it was like 4 hours. You remember how long it was?
Struck. I said, look, I get I was obnoxious a few times. I said, cut me heavily. He said, well, we're going to cut you a little bit. I go, just cut a lot. It's okay. They admitted we won halfway through, so we can't have too big a route.
Well, that kind of happened in our debate, too. They kept agreeing with us.
Well, you know the problem? I told you this when you came on our show, but they kept saying, well, you don't have a plan. You're going to have to come out and vote for our guy anyways because your guy's going to get 3% or whatever. And I said, look, you think we don't have a plan? No, we don't have the man yet. We don't have the dark horse. We don't have the man, but we actually do have a plan. Your plan is to run Vance, but here's the deal. What is Vance going to do? If he counters Trump, says, I won't be bad like Trump has been, he's been a disappointment, he's going to lose all the loyal MAGA. If he actually just runs with a legacy of Trump, he's going to lose all of us. So they don't actually have they have the man, but not the plan. Well, we have a plan, but not the man.
They admitted halfway through, they go, no, you're right, the war's bad. Just don't undermine Trump. We're like, he attacks us and makes it worse.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'll leave you guys back at the show.
Yeah. No, this was great.
Like a jack-in-the-box.
This is classic Alex Jones. This is it.
This is what it's about.
All right.
So
we're going to talk about Christian nationalism.
Yeah, and just sort of defining that and
that
means.
They're saying Christian nationalism is synonymous with white nationalism. And I actually had Thomas Russo, right? He's the head of
Patriot Front. Yeah.
But here's the deal. I didn't have him on to agree with everything. Although, for the record, I like him.
Smart guy.
He's a smart guy. He's respectful. This is how you know that Patriot Front is not a Fed op, because there were no pipe bombs.
Right. They don't actually do anything illegal.
Right. Nobody actually got hurt, so I think it's probably upstanding citizens. But he is a white nationalist, and in his defense, if he was sitting right here, he would say, a white nationalist, that's redundant, Joel. I'm a nationalist.
Right, right. Because nation means family,
This is what it comes down to, and we have to be honest about this. What is a nation? Is a nation just an economic zone? Is it a set of propositions, or is it a people in a particular place? And all throughout the Bible, right, when you look at ethnos, you're defining biblically a nation, it is a people, right? Can the leopard change its spots? Nor can the Ethiopian change his skin. Everyone knew who an Ethiopian was, not because he busted out his paperwork, right, but because it's like, oh, that's an Ethiopian. I can tell by the way he looks.
All right, and all these words come from, the Latin for birth, right? Nature, right. Natal, nation. I mean, it means it's your birth, correct. The condition of your birth. Yeah.
So I am a Christian nationalist. I have never taken on the label white nationalist. And it's not because I want to get cutesy and modern and change the definition of what a nation is. Because here's the deal. Like our founders would have agreed with Thomas Russo, mm-hmm. actually, right? A white man, white free man of good character.
Right.
That's what they would say. This is the guy who gets to vote for us and our posterity. They weren't talking about China or India, So they had that understanding. So he is not way off in left field. That doesn't make him a racist. Doesn't mean you hate anybody or, whatever. That said, I do think that America is unique. Not so unique that we're an economic zone or just a propositional nationhood. But I do believe that we have
sort of an amount of diversity baked in since our founding.
Yes. And here's the deal. I do think that Providence, right? Whether it was right at the time or not, Providence kind of it shuffles the deck. It changes the game. And in the providence of God, it's been a while. It's been a minute, right? We're talking about a few centuries at this point. And I'm sorry, but Clarence Thomas is not going back. Not like we got to be real. It's not going
to
happen.
It would be unfair to expect people whose families have been here longer than most white people
exactly.
to give up their. Yeah.
So I just define myself as I'm not a race essentialist. Right. I think that religion is more important than race. Race isn't everything, but it's also not nothing. I would describe myself as a race realist. So I think that race
that
is real
matters.
And there's not just melanin. It's not just skin tone. There actually are different peoples with different strengths and different weaknesses. We know this. People suppress it and pretend that it's not, but we know that the average IQ of Haiti is different than the average IQ of America. And we know that
it's not a moral judgment on their worth as people.
Exactly. So all people are equal, I think, in two ways. Number one, in the sight of God, eternally speaking, all people are made in the image of God. There are no subhumans. That's demonic. That's heresy. That's wrong. And as a Christian minister, I'm going to stand against that. There are not pre-Adamic people, right? The mud people or what that's crap. And I don't like that. That's heresy. So I believe I'm an old fuddy-duddy, Bible thumping believer. So I believe that God created the world in six literal days. I believe that Eve, her name is Eve, which means mother of all the living. Right. And I don't believe that God used macroevolution to create the world, because macroevolution assumes millions and millions of bones, death. You have, one superior species sitting on the pile of all these inferior ones that came before it and died. But the Bible teaches that death entered the world through sin. So I believe that sin preceded death. And so Adam and Eve were the first people, the only people. God made them. We all descended from Adam and Eve. But here's the deal. Even if, I know getting into the weeds, but I think your listeners will find it fascinating. Noah's Ark, right? Well, how did we get millions? We have millions of different species. How do they all fit on the Ark? The Bible gives us the dimensions. Well, it's two canines. And from them, over a few thousand years at this point, you get Chihuahuas and you get Great Danes, right? It's two felines and you get lions, and you get house cats. And well, here's the deal. There are two of every kind of animal, male and female. But there's one creature, not an animal, but a creature on this boat, on the ark, where there's not just two, but there's actually eight persons in all. That's literally what First Peter says. Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their three wives. Do we think that there would be some kind of diversity over, right? One son and his wife, they go and settle this region, right? Some are closer to the equator. Some are further away. High time preference, low time preference. There's snow. There's winter. There's harsher elements. In this place, you have to plan ahead, future minded. This other place, every day is kind of like the last. And over time, and that's just the biological, physical, climate shaping, not macro evolution, but micro evolution, adaption over time. Then there's the spiritual side. Right? That you have, okay, what about those who have been faithful to God? They worship God, and others that sold out and compromised and worship demons. And how does that affect people over time? Not just spiritually, but the spiritual has an impact even on the physical. Think about world religion. Every single major world religion, whether it's Islam or Hinduism, is a great example, or Christianity. Does it just speak about heaven? heavenly things, spiritual things, or does every major world religion, or another great example would be Judaism, does it have dietary restrictions?
Yeah.
Who you can marry, who you can't marry, capital punishment?
Absolutely.
Does that affect lineage? Yes.
And it's not just that. We do it every time we go to church. You stand up, you kneel, you sit. There's there's something important about the physical actions you're doing. It's funny. We do it without even thinking about it. Yeah.
Bread and wine, water for baptism. These are physical expressions of our faith. And so what would you do if there are Christian people that are observing the law of God, the covenant of God, the word of God, and they're not marrying their cousins, right? If you ever wonder, well, what's going on with Somalia, right? Why are these people the way that, why are you the way that you are?
Right.
I'll just leave it there. Well, you look at Somalia and I'm not bragging about this. I'm not happy. This is a tragedy, but, their lineage, their people, it's filled with incest.
Yeah, consanguinity. And that is largely...
That has a biological effect.
And it's largely born from greed, right? It's about like, well, I don't want my family's wealth going off to that other family, so we're going to keep it in. So, you know...
And royal dynasties and have the same kind of thing. It's like, hey, they're ruling the known world and they're super rich, again, but they're also retarded because they're inbred.
Right, and you can almost see this the physical consequence of the spiritual failure.
Exactly.
Of being greedy. Yeah.
So all that back to Christian nationalism. My point is, as a Christian nationalist, I think that it's just stupid. I think we have a short window of time because I think that truth eventually breaks out. So suppression is going to go away. It may come in waves, but ultimately I think it goes away. If you're going to sit here and say there's no such thing as race, it's just one race, the human race, you may get away with that, but Gen Z, Gen Alpha, they're going to laugh you off the stage.
Yeah, and
everyone
and
knows that's not true.
And it's not true for anybody else. And this is my thing is, Christianity, Europe used to be called Christendom. There's a very clear, direct connection between the history of the European people and the history of Christianity. And I see a lot of the attacks on Christianity as sort of proxy attacks on white people overall, because it's the mindset that white people really manifested first, and the idea of human rights and democracy and all these things. They came out of Europe. You just can't dispute that. That's where they came in. So the people who want to destroy those things have decided we'll tie these ideas to the race, we'll demonize the race. Look, they had slaves, so we have to destroy them. And so we also have to destroy the documents that the founding fathers wrote and the ideas embedded in there. I mean, it's not that complicated, but the people in power identify a racial element and are targeting people on the basis
of
race. So to not defend yourself on the basis of race, you're just being stupid. It's not up to you. It's up to the people attacking you on the basis of your race. Why not defend yourself on the basis of your race?
Right.
And if it was happening to any other race, white people would be outraged If what was happening to white people was happening to black people, it would be white people on the front line saying, this is horrible, we have to stop this.
Right.
So you just have to have as much respect for yourself as you do for other people. It's not that weird.
So Christian nationalism, if we were in another nation, I would actually be fine with that Christian nationalism also having a component of an ethno-nationalism.
Same.
Like if God, by way of providence and his sovereignty, sends revival to Japan, I pray that that happens. Japan is Japanese, ethnically speaking, not just in a civic kind of union. And so a Christian Japan would also be an ethnically Japanese Japan, and they should stay that way. But in America, what I would say is, okay, it's crazy right now. So I would say Hartzeller Act, which was pushed by a Jew, not every single Stein, but every single time kind of situation, 100 million need to go back. And Trump's not going to give it to us. But by the grace of God, one day, I hope, we actually get mass deportation. So a lot of people actually do need to go back. And of course, disproportionately, it's not going to be a bunch of white people. It's going to be a bunch of people who are third worlders who should have never been here in the first place. So I think America should be, because it's true to our history, it should be predominantly white, right? But America is never going to be exclusively white, because even though the true definition of nation speaks to people and lineage and family and those kinds of things, there is a providence factor. And we just have to recognize the providence is here different. So then what do I mean as a Christian nationalist? I mean that America should be unapologetically and politically, publicly, explicitly Christian. I think that we should adopt the Apostles' Creed to the Constitution as a preamble. I don't think it should be confessional, where it's all Presbyterians or all Baptists or we gang up on the Catholics. I think it should be creedal, right? So it's Athanasius Creed, it's Nicene, it's Apostles. So it's a creedal, broad Christianity. So exclusively Christian, but broadly Christian, so that nobody is persecuted. And that keeps the intact, I think, the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law when it comes to the First Amendment, right? Freedom of religion. They weren't talking about freedom of Islam or Judaism. They meant freedom of religion as it comes to particular convictions of our common Lord. Right. They were saying that Presbyterians aren't going to drown the Baptist and vice versa.
Because that had been happening for a couple hundred years in
the UK. Exactly. You have to look at authorial intent.
Yeah.
You actually have to get to authorial intent and what they were talking about. They were talking about Christian on Christian persecution. We're not going to do that in America. So I think we should adopt the Apostles' Creed as a preamble to the Constitution. I think the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments are good, but get back to authorial intent. I just gave you an example with the First Amendment. The latter amendments, I do think, need to be revisited. I'm not saying every single one of them goes, but they need to be revisited. The Constitution itself is beautiful. I'm not anti-Constitution, but as a wise man yourself once said, people who love the Constitution are going to have to be willing to temporarily forego the Constitution in order to stop those who hate the Constitution from using the Constitution to destroy the Constitution. Right? You have to know the game.
It sounds complicated, but it's actually not that complicated. And
we know that's happening.
And it's like the Constitution is being destroyed by the left. I mean, they intend to. And they're very open. I have articles and videos today of people talking about they want to destroy the Electoral College. They want to get rid of the Senate. They want to get rid of the Supreme Court. That's because they intend to do tyrannical things and they intend to break the Constitution. So it's like, okay, if we have to temporarily suspend some aspects of the Constitution, especially the later aspects, the amendments or the, you know, precedents that have been established. If we have to, you know, say, hey, look, I'm sorry that Joe Biden told you were going to be a citizen, but he had no right to make that claim.
Joe and Biden's
we're going to have to withdraw it. Yeah, it's just like, I'm sorry, we're going to have to break the agreement that traitor made. And that's just what we have to
correct.
Do to save the country, or else it's given over to people who literally despise the Constitution. And I would say Islam is incompatible with the Constitution. I mean,
exactly.
Fundamentally, you cannot have the things that our Constitution contains while upholding Islam or even Judaism.
Exactly.
You can while it's Christian.
You're right. Hinduism, Judaism, Islam, it is counterintuitive, directly contradictory to what it means to be an American. It's anti-American. And so I would like to see a Christian nation formally and publicly. What does that mean? That there's going to be church attendance laws? No. I would like to see us, and it's like, well, that's not American. It's actually very American for there to be Sabbath laws that never in our history never mandated church attendance. But what it did do is it said, we're going to set the earthly conditions, civic conditions, in such a way it orients people. It doesn't force them, not force conversions. Only the Holy Spirit can change someone's heart. You can't force someone to be a Christian. But it's setting a conducive environment that orients people towards heavenly life. So we're not going to bombard people on the Lord's Day with markets and capitalism, crony capitalism, and advertisements on your smart fridge. The first thing you see when you wake up in the morning, you know, and like, no, we're going to say, no, this is a day of rest. And Christians are encouraged to go and worship. Nobody's forced to. It means, what does it mean to be a Christian nationalist? It means that from the White House on Christmas, you get Merry Christmas and you don't get Happy Diwali. Right? Does it mean that we round up all the Muslims and we round up? No. But it does mean you can have church bells because that's a public expression, but you don't get to have prayer sirens.
Yeah.
Because we're a Christian nation. We don't do that
here. And again, you know, we'll have other religions here, but you know, you go to Saudi Arabia, there's not a single church in Saudi Arabia. And
that's
I don't
right.
begrudge them that. If that's how
Dubai.
They, it's fine. Yeah.
Dubai is very, as Western as it can be. So you go to Dubai as a modern, you know, Western kind of person, and you're not going to be thrown in jail and you're not going to be mistreated and all those kinds of things.
But you're not going to hold office.
Yes.
You're sure as hell not going to
hold office.
And you're not going to build a church.
You're not
going to
dress like a whore either.
Right. And so, hey, if that's how they want to run their country and you don't like that, you can't. You
and
just
all
don't
these feminist boss babes want to go party in Dubai.
Right.
Right. So they want to go on vacation in Dubai. But guess what they're able to do? They're able to abide by the rules. And then when they're at home, they treat America like a brothel. Nobody can tell me what to do. I'm
right.
my own boss.
And you're a Nazi if you say so.
Right.
Incredible stuff. Christ is King. America After Trump is the name of the conference. NewChristianRight.com/conference. Fishback, all one word.
At last, it's here. Bring it into the docking bay. Stack them all in my chambers at once. I now have all the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter shower heads from the Alex Jones store.
There's something about this water I feel kind of funny. Hey, do you want to hang out tonight?
These stormtroopers are not warriors. They are vessels. We keep them full of chemicals to keep them under control. Like the dark side itself. It dulls the mind. It fractures the will.
Drink your water, troopers. I am sending you to the desert planet of Tatooine. We must crush the rebel force.
Dude, I think I'm gay. Me too. Let's go back to the ship and cuddle. I thought you'd never ask.
Turn around now. And get back out there. These are your orders.
They're turning the frogs gay. Don't let them turn you next. Ha ha ha. You have to admit that Alex Jones is funny.
AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Freshly declassified documents by the White House Government Transparency Task Force detail the secret counterintelligence FBI operation known as Round River. Beginning around December 2019, analysts with the Foreign Influence Task Force on Russia pulled together earlier reports from confidential sources about the Biden family's links to Burisma, Hunter Biden, Mykola Zlochevsky, and the rest of the Ukraine situation. Then they stamped that material as Russian disinformation.
Well, what we definitely know is that Trump and Vladimir Putin actually have a few things in common when it comes to the media. Both of them happen to be propaganda machines. They spread misinformation, disinformation, and sow divisions in the United States. That's Russia's mission, we know, from the intelligence community. And Donald Trump has proven himself to be a tool, a Russian tool, for spreading that misinformation and disinformation.
Whether President Trump was secretly working on behalf of Russia.
Whether the president was secretly working with Russia against America.
Whether Trump was secretly working on behalf of the Russians.
Whether Trump was secretly working on behalf of Russia.
Whether President Trump was working on behalf of Russia.
Whether President Trump was working on Russia's behalf.
Whether the sitting president was secretly working for Russia.
Whether President Trump was working for Russia from the Oval Office.
A 2025 ODNI summary says the team did it without first checking whether any of those claims were even true. In some cases, they even went back and changed the source files to match the new label. The records show at least 14 confidential human sources gave the FBI derogatory information on Joe Biden. A spreadsheet from the intelligence files split people into two groups. Republicans like Bill Barr, Mike Pompeo, Chuck Grassley, Ron Johnson, Lindsey Graham, Devin Nunes, and Jim Jordan got listed as conduits of Russian disinformation. Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, Barack Obama, and George Soros got listed as targets, and the Foreign Influence Task Force signed off on those labels.
How many companies other than Burisma did the Obama-Biden State Department prepare you to give answers for? And if so, if there were others, which ones?
I just don't recall.
What's your understanding of what your son was doing for an extraordinary amount of money?
I don't know what he was doing. I know he was on the board. I found out he was on the board after he was on the board.
Why was it you found the allegations against Joe Biden related to his son or Burisma not to be believed?
Simply because I've known former Vice President Biden for a long time. I know how he respects his duties of higher office, and it's just not credible to me that a Vice President of the United States is going to do anything other than act as how he sees best for the national interest.
40 FBI informants have been feeding the Bureau exactly what Joe Biden, James Biden, and Hunter Biden have been doing all over the world. Primetime isn't sure the FBI had this many informants working on the Trump campaign. So, what does it mean that the FBI has had the Biden family wired? And what does it mean that the FBI hasn't done a thing? Well, it tells me that the FBI knows all of the president's dirty laundry and is blackmailing him. Because Senator Grassley also revealed that multiple FBI field offices tried to run this criminal information back to headquarters and were blocked at every corner.
FBI Director Kash Patel confirmed in a letter to the task force that he shut down the Foreign Influence Task Force after he took over. He said the Bureau is now investigating what the task force did, including whether it used the Round River work to zero in only on the Biden-related sources. Patel also noted that they found at least 53 relevant sources overall and are getting ready to release the reporting from all of them. An operation that adds more fuel to a raging fire, revealing outright illegitimate use of government power that shielded one side from scrutiny ahead of the debacle we now know as the 2020 election. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision. And that is ivermectin with minbenazidil, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this. But minbenazidil is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenazidil studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists, you'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, live with you here for the next 2 hours. Hopefully, we'll start seeing some returns from the Florida governor primary race. Polls close in just 2 hours, I believe. I believe it closes at 7 p.m. or we start to get official results around 7 p.m. Florida time. So I'll be just at the end of this show, but we'll bring you any polls that we get in the meantime, or any hints about how it may end up. Of course, a lot of other stuff to talk about, and I still intend to open up the phone lines for your calls in the final hour. And we do have, like I said, new hidden camera footage from the James O'Keefe Justice Team, who is exposing the ease with which illegal immigrants or their friends and family can vote in American elections. We'll show you some of those videos. And I'm definitely not going to spin the show on the Twitter drama. Absolutely not. But it is all sitting here in front of me. And I want to say a few things. And I would like to say just a few things. But now that I think about it, maybe I'll just move on because people are probably sick of it. But I will. But let me just say that because I know what happened. I don't know. I watch these things. I'm just like, I can just see perfectly exactly what has occurred in everybody's mind. And not, but think about this. Alex Jones puts out this video where he says X changed their algorithm and it's caused live streams across the board, all live streams, to crater their audience. You know, it's cratered their audience. They've dropped 90% of live stream audience. And I experienced this myself because if you're watching a live stream on X, you try to minimize it, it messes up now. It used to be that you could minimize a live stream and still be watching it, but maybe it's just my phone or something. But every time I try to minimize a live stream, it just closes now. So I think that might have something to do with it. Regardless, when I saw Alex's post, it never even entered into my mind that he was complaining that he was being censored, because that's just obviously not what was happening. It was obvious from the way that he phrased it and the words that he said that he was saying, hey, look, this is a change to the X algorithm that affects live streams. We noticed it on our live streams, but it's not just us. It's a major glitch that has occurred and that Elon Musk needs to be made aware of. Anybody reading that, reading the words that it says, would understand that. Here's the thing. Tim Pool and The Quartering have both made a career about complaining about being algorithmically censored. Tim Pool and The Quartering are two people, probably more than any other person I've ever seen, who routinely make posts about, because they're hyper aware of the algorithm. And you can see this if you watch either one of their shows. They're constantly talking about like, oh, well, the algorithm changed. So now we, you know, we changed up what we're doing to fit the algorithm. Like they're hyper aware of what gets pushed, what gets, you know, punished. They're constantly looking at their numbers, constantly looking at their revenue. What, you know, what happened here? Why did we drop here? Why did we drop here? And so they're projecting their own mindset onto Alex Jones. So when they read it and they just skim over the words and don't actually read the words, they're almost putting their own voice in it because they are so often making posts saying, you know, our audience dropped 75% after the latest algorithm change. We're being targeted. Please give us money. We're under attack. The stream is under attack by leftists. You have to give us money. That's the claim they're constantly making. So when Alex makes a claim just about the algorithm overall, they actually see it like through a mirror. You know, they're seeing what they do all the time. Then they're projecting that onto Alex and then coming out and attacking Alex on that basis. Which is why then when Alex responds, people go, why is Alex attacking Tim Pool? It's because Alex just made a comment about a change in the algorithm affecting everybody, and Tim Pool and Quartering both used it as an excuse, misinterpreting it because of their own internal bias and internal, you know, way of interacting with the algorithm. They project that onto, here, Tim Pool has repeatedly complained about the X Twitter algorithm, mainly about it forcing him into algorithmic feeds. And, yeah, I don't know, he complains about it all the time. I mean, Quartering, it's the same thing. It's like a constant drama with him and, oh, we're being shut down and it, which I just have to laugh because, you know, I don't know if you know this, but the person they're in a beef with is Alex freaking Jones. We're talking about InfoWars. We're talking about the number one worldwide most censored organization of all time, perhaps. They've changed laws to stop Alex Jones. They kicked us off of every single platform in a single day in 2018, just trying to stop us. And we don't even complain about it as much as these guys do. And they are propped up and profitable and monetized absolutely everywhere. So the whole thing is just ridiculous. And honestly, we shouldn't even be lowering ourselves to their level. But I haven't seen anybody else note that fact that the reason Tim Pool and Quarter Pounder misinterpreted Alex Jones was because they both make those posts where they're constantly complaining about being targeted by the algorithm, and they just assumed that Alex Jones was making that same complaint and they didn't actually read what his post was actually saying. So it's I don't know, if you don't follow these guys and don't know this, I mean, no, it's like a continual thing with Quartering. It's more about the YouTube algorithm than anything else. But again, the idea that you would lose 90% of your audience over anything, it just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. But they're desperate for a little crumb of relevance, a little crumb of clout, please, sir. And Alex was kind enough to deign provide it for them. And then there's I really could talk about all, but like this type of stuff, when The Quartering posts out that he thinks somebody is controlling Alex Jones's Twitter feed, and it's like the entire interchange, the entire exchange between Tim Pool, Quartering, and it's Alex sitting in his car filming videos in real time. And so it's like, why do they say these things? You know, it's like, oh, I think somebody's taking control. I think somebody else is posting on Alex's account. And it's like, what? They're in his car with him, filming him, but they're the ones like, what are you talking about? Like, why say stuff like that? This is what I mean. Why do they come up with this stuff when they just know that it's absolutely like it can't possibly, the man is literally filming himself in an empty car and then posting the video. And you think that somebody else is doing that? How? Would somebody else do that? Makes no sense. It makes no sense. So why are you saying it? And why can people not see through this stuff? I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand fully, but we'll move on now. That's the last I'm going to say about that, I think. And we'll move on to some less fun story. I mean, the thing is that it's kind of fun to talk about Twitter drama, and people love it. I mean, come on. You can't tell me you don't love the drama. You can't tell me you don't love the conflict, the combat, the verbal sparring that goes on. Everybody loves it. And it's more fun than talking about, oh, I don't know, a man who killed his own landlord and was allowed to walk out of a Virginia mental facility on a weekend pass, and he used it to board a one-way international flight out of the country. He's gone. He's not coming back. His name is Abduloy. So I don't know. Part of me just wants to talk about Jeremy and Tim Pool because it's less intense than the murder and chaos and warfare and wholesale destruction of our way of life that the rest of this news contains. But I guess we'll start with that. I guess we can start with that story since I'm on it. Clip number 5 here from Matt Van Swole. A man who killed his own landlord was allowed to walk out of a Virginia mental institute, which is just another one of these situations where I feel like my role should not be necessary. It shouldn't be necessary for somebody like me to have to like try to advocate for a change in the law. Like, why do we have insanity laws? Why do we have these? They don't make any sense. We just shouldn't have them. And I've explained before, I think it's getting to the point where it's so convoluted and sort of just malleable that basically the more heinous of a crime you commit, the more likely you are to get away with it by saying you're insane. So if you kill your husband to get his inheritance, that's pretty straightforward. Nothing really insane about that. It's evil. It's greedy. It's vicious. It's a crime, but it's not insane because it's very simple. You want money. He's in the way. You get him out of the way. We've all seen that over and over again, and it's not insane. Nothing insane about that. To walk up to a stranger and slit her throat on the subway to kill your 3 children, that's insane. Yeah, it is insane. I guess you have to be insane to do something. You don't gain anything. You don't benefit anything. It's not like you were in a state of rage and couldn't think straight and did something that, you know, you wouldn't have done if you were in your right mind. But you have to be insane to commit these brutal, horrific, senseless, purposeless crimes against strangers. So it's like, okay, the less sense the crime makes, the more vicious and random it is, the more likely they are to say, Your Honor, my client must be insane. He doesn't need prison. He needs help. He needs hospital. He needs hospital and medication and care, tender, loving care. How about we just get rid of all that? How about everything that our law enforcement system does to these people? Let's get rid of all of it. And let's replace not guilty by reason of insanity with guilty by reason of insanity. And it comes with a guaranteed death penalty. Can we do that or life in prison? Either one. But obviously, somebody being insane is not a reason that they should not be punished for their crime or that they should even not be charged for their crime. It should be worse. To be insane means not only are you guilty of the crime, you cannot be reformed. And we don't have an ability to reform the type of mental illness that causes you to murder a random person. So until we invent that, I guess you have to go in the box forever. Why not? Why would we not do that? So, you know, it's one of these things that's like the prisoner escaped. It's like, oh my God, the murder suspect escaped? How? We let him go home. He has a weekend pass, in fact, to leave whenever he wants. Do I need to explain the corrective measures that should be taken from this point on? Do I need to explain what went wrong? Like, I think I've found the issue. I think I've identified the issue. If I was the counselor coming in to give advice about this, I think my first piece of advice would be do not give your insane,
these were called here
violent, psychotic murderers weekend passes. That'll be $4 million, please. I could be a consultant for the government. I could solve these problems. If they need somebody to explain what's going on, I'm available and I can solve these problems. You got prisoners getting on planes to fly to a different country instead of face a murder charge. here's my advice, don't let them do that. How about you have some sort of rule in place that says they can't do that? Now, I know what you're thinking. There is a rule in place. He wasn't supposed to do this. Okay, I get it. I understand. Have an enforcement mechanism to enforce the rule. Have you thought about that? He's not allowed to leave the country, but he is allowed to leave the institution, and he also has a passport and a driver's license and a wallet and the ability to get on an international flight. So I think you should keep him in jail from now on. Who do I need to explain this to? Where was this from? Get me Spanberger on the phone. I need the governor of Virginia on the phone to try to get them this important information about what they can do right now to stop prisoners from fleeing the country, and it's don't let them go. Let's watch.
Police were called here at about 8:45 for the report of a person stabbed. Now, when they got here, they performed CPR on the victim, was taken to a hospital, and later pronounced dead. Now, we have learned that a suspect is in custody, and Fairfax County Police are saying that there is no threat to the public. This all seemed to appear, it seems to have happened inside a home here, as you can see, crime scene tape, and investigators remain on the scene. But again, one person stabbed, pronounced dead at a hospital here in Vienna, the 2900 block of Edgley Road. Police say they have a suspect in custody and that there is no threat to the public. That's all we know for now. No identities on the victim or the suspect. We are live in Vienna. Derek Ward, News 4. Back to you.
That is certainly an unusual area for that to happen, Derek. All right. We'll look for the latest on that. Thank you, Derek.
Well, there are dark parts of that.
Very unusual indeed. Man who killed his own landlord was allowed to walk out of a Virginia mental facility on a weekend pass. He used it to board a one-way flight out of the country. His name? Abdulloy Toshpuldozga. But here's the thing. Well, let's read what it actually is. So he was found not guilty by reason of insanity and committed to the Northern Virginia Mental Health Institute in 2022. Under Virginia law, that facility was allowed to hand this man unescorted weekend day passes. Weekend and day passes. No guard, no escort, just go and please come back. Setting a killer on the loose. So on July 6th, he took his little weekend pass, drove to Dulles Airport, and boarded a one-way flight to Tajikistan. Somebody even bought his ticket for him in his name with a window seat. It gets worse. The prosecutors actually opposed letting him out in June. They warned it was a public safety risk, but they say once it's out of court, they have no say in what the facility decides. So the people whose job is public safety said no, and a mental health facility overrode them and gave a blood-soaked accused murderer a pass to leave. And the cherry on top, prosecutors didn't get filed to get a cross-border warrant until August 5th, a full month after he was already gone. He's now in a country with no extradition. He's never seeing an American courtroom again. An accused murderer escaped justice completely just because a bureaucracy gave him a weekend pass and nobody stopped him. We don't have to live like this. And unless I'm mistaken, I believe the first comment underneath this says, last month, my stepdad was killed while on his daily walk in Virginia. A woman from Nicaragua ran a stop sign and struck him. Her only punishment was a $250 ticket. A life was taken, but justice was denied. The justice system in Virginia is working against American citizens. She's exactly right. But then here's the craziest part of this. From Mary Kay, you left out the most important part. Our DA, Steve Descano, first petitioned the court to allow the killer to be escorted to an embassy in D.C. to obtain a passport. He didn't have a passport, so the prosecutor, a Soros-funded prosecutor, Steve Descano, asked for a judge for a illegal alien Islamic extremist murderer to be let out of confinement and driven to the Tajikistan embassy in D.C. to get a foreign passport. Then he was given a 48-hour pass to leave the psych ward, and he used it to go to another country. It's just one of those things. It's just one of those things where there is just no good reason to do any of this. Yeah, it's not one of these mistakes where you go, hey, it had good intentions, but sometimes things go wrong. Hey, you did everything you could, but sometimes something slips through the crack. Can you come up with a legitimate reason why the prosecutor of the case would take the accused murderer to the embassy of his home country to obtain a passport and then let him out on a 48-hour window and allow him to book a flight to a country with no extradition? What is the reasonable explanation for that? What was the reason given when this prosecutor made the request? What could he have possibly justified it by? We have a foreign murderer on trial for murder, but we're going to go out of our way and make a special dispensation to go get him a passport and then give him a 48-hour window to run. I think we may be past the point now where, and I'm not giving legal advice to anybody, certainly. I guess I should ask a question. Would you go to the cops? I mean, if you were this landlord's family, how would you be feeling right now? Your father, your brother, your son gets murdered in their own home by some foreign barbarian that the government let in. But hey, at least they catch the guy. They arrest the guy. They're going to charge the guy. And then they let him get on a plane to just Tajikistan after obtaining a passport for him. I mean, how do you think they're feeling right now? Think they feel satisfied in the working of the Justice Department? Do you think you can go to them and say, hey, look, you know, this is, we got the best system that we can, you know? You know, we tried super hard, but darn it, we let him go. We bought him a plane ticket and put him on a flight. Whoops. Sorry, I guess your dad has to go unavenged now. Guess that guy just gets to kill your son and leave. I mean, how long do you think this is going to go on? And if you are a friend or a family member of this landlord, God forbid, what happens if somebody else is murdered around you? Are you going to say, well, you know, guess we got to call the cops. Guess we got to let them drag us through a court system for a couple months before they just let the guy go again. I guess that's what you do when your family member gets murdered. You get to dedicate a large chunk of your life entertaining the vicissitudes of the legal system for a couple months before, you know, the guy gets let out anyway. I think I would just kill the guy. I think I would just kill the guy. I think if I was the family member of this murder victim, I'd be looking around for somebody else to pay the price that has been deprived me. I've been deprived justice now. Who am I getting the blood from? I need the blood. I need the blood to wash away the sin of killing my family member. Who will provide it to me? I genuinely think the judge should go to jail. I mean, why should the judge in this case not go to jail? Why should the facility operator not go to jail? Why should this prosecutor who went and got the guy? I mean, he is complicit in this crime. He was actually a core component, a necessary criminal carrying this crime out. Questions raised after man in Fairfax murder case obtains passport, leaves country. What price are these people going to pay for this? This is unacceptable. And it really does feel like right now there's like more. I mean, I worked for a while as like a pizza guy. Like I delivered pizza. If I took a turn too fast, which I did often, and the whole pizza slid to the side of the box and it ruined the pizza, I felt so bad. I would get bitched out by my boss. I'd like lose tips. I'd have to drive all the way back to the store and go back, and I would just feel terrible. And I would like really, it feels like people now are letting murderers go. They're being complicit in like murder crime. They don't even feel bad. It's like, it's not even a problem to them. They never even get in trouble for it. I feel like they feel less bad about letting a murderer escape the country than I did about messing up a large pepperoni order for Double Dave's, you know? But do you, like, because I guess my point is, one, there should be a punishment mechanism for this type of mistake, because I don't require the criminals doing this to feel bad about it or, you know, feel guilty. They can feel guilty or not. They should be punished. They should be made to suffer. Ideally, an individual, when they mess up, they suffer internally, like I did if I messed up a pizza order. I felt so bad every time. It happened a lot. I wasn't very good. I drove really fast and really erratically. But I would feel so bad if I messed up a pizza. These people are just like, oh, the murderer got out and murdered somebody else. Whoops. Whoopsies. Y'all see him now. You're free to go. They don't care. They genuinely don't care. So, A, I'd like to see them punished, but B, what's wrong with these people and who are they? And how do we get ruled by humans? How do we set up a system where we're ruled by human beings with souls? I guess is the ultimate goal here. The ultimate utopia we're striving for is to have people in power who have human souls and feel emotions. How do we do that? Any suggestions, anybody? I'm open to suggestions, whatever we got.
New grape flavor, bovine colostrum gummies. Yeah, baby. Yeah, these are the best. Support your gut with these grape gummies. Get yours now. The all-new Groovy Grape Bovine Colostrum Gummies have arrived. They're sweet, they're groovy, and they're ready to roll. Dope us out. Get yours today. Oh, yeah, baby. The globalists are poisoning your family. Fight back with superfood gummies, vitamins, powerhouse probiotics, plus an organic fruit and veggie blast. For the resistance, get them now. Now that's how you stick it to the globalists. Tastes like pure victory, baby. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
We have to fight for our sovereignty. We have to fight to protect, again, what God gave us, which, I mean, our health is one of the biggest things. We're all at this point middle-aged. We're trying to have families. And I think with the transhumanist agenda, there is a little bit of a psyop afoot.
Well, I've said that the other day when I had you guys coming on. I said, we're doing something about what we can take control of. Mm. And then the last few years, Joe Rogan, one time at dinner, goes, about 3 years ago, you're fat, your own enemy. He does that to guests. It was like Theo Vaughn, too. Get off that Prozac, you idiot. And people were mad at him. That's tough love Joe does. And he's there with Sean Johnson, the Navy SEAL guy that I'd known for years, wasn't really friends. Sean goes, fine, I'll train you. I'll meet you every morning. And I said, all right, let's do it. And then I lost like 70 pounds, and I kind of halfway cut back and gave back 10, but now I'm back to where I was. I'm going to go even lower. But the whole point is that Joe goes, you know, you're your own worst enemy. You think the globalists are going to kill you. You're killing yourself. And so that's where Masterpiece comes in. That's where doing all this comes in. I mean, this is real, folks. Methylene blue works. Bovine colostrum works. This, getmasterpiece.com. The Masterpiece is unbelievable.
We are at a crossroads with the survival of the human species. And the people that have all the resources and all have spelled that out very clearly to us. And the things that they are putting inside of our body to complete that mission. You got to get out. The fact of the matter is, zeolite, which is one of the main ingredients of Masterpiece, has been proven in all ways to remove every toxin that it's looked at grabbing. It performs. That's why it's called the Master Binder.
But yours is different.
Completely different.
Because it doesn't just pull stuff. It brings in the key sea minerals.
Yes, absolutely. So any way that you would actually test Masterpiece out, which would be like its pH, its molecular composition, its molecular ratio, if it's isotonic and whatnot, it is identical to blood plasma. You're talking about marine plasma, sea plasma, minerals. It is the same molecular composition as your blood profile. And so why does that matter? Blood is life. When you are grabbing the problem with our bodies, with the toxins in there, which is disrupting how our bodies perform on every level, it's literally made our bodies mineral deficient. Toxins take the place of minerals. So when the Masterpiece is carrying in minerals, when it takes a toxin, it's giving the perfect minerals right there at that time. That's why everyone that looks at the testing, whether it's our hair tissue mineral analysis practitioners, our blood testers, which we've done three different independent third-party labs doing different blood testing, they've never seen results like
that. Yeah, so regular zeolite just pulls out bad stuff but doesn't replace it. This is zeolite with a good thing, pulls out bad, it goes bloop, good.
Yeah. Our bodies are magical if you get the poisons out.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Yeah.
back, folks. You know, I remember being in like high school and hearing the phrase, truth is treason in an empire of lies. I feel like we almost need an update to that. What I was going to say is like, I had no idea what an empire of lies really could look like. Because we lived in one back then, sure. But it's almost like because it was so top-down controlled still, because the internet had not become what it is now and social media didn't exist, there still wasn't a huge amount of that sort of decentralized human intelligence network at work now. But, you know, it was true back then, the empire of lies, the sort of routine, really the cascade of lies, sort of one building on top of the other that we lived in. But nowadays you look around and it needs to be something like sanity is treason in the empire of the insane. I just came up with that. I think that's pretty good. Sanity is treason in the empire of the insane. Because that's where we're at now. Because this has, it's beyond lies. It's beyond lies. It's beyond falsehoods and truths. There's something else at play here. Because I always just try to stick with the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And it allows us to be dead on correct about things literally years before anybody else. Because I try to think about some of the instances of insanity in the modern day, things like this Lindsay Clancy woman getting $1 million and all these women showing support for a mother who murdered her 3 children. Completely insane. Or Carmelo Anthony. And I try to think, okay, there have been kind of similar situations on the flip side. A lot of people believed that Kyle Rittenhouse rocked up to a Black Lives Matter protest with a gun and killed a bunch of black people and got away with it somehow. But they were wrong. But they were absolutely wrong. And things I'm most proud of. You know, I didn't have a show yet, so I went on the very next day. I was up to like 3 a.m. getting every video I could from the Kyle Rittenhouse event. And that day on the War Room with Owen, I went on and presented what I thought actually happened beat by beat. And we nailed it and we got it exactly right. Because absolutely, we would have been willing to throw Kyle Rittenhouse under the bus. If it turned out that I reviewed the video and it's like, oh, dude, this guy just killed people. Like, that was crazy. If he just murdered people, that's what I would have said. I would have come out and said, this guy's not on our team. He's not on our side. We want nothing to do with him. We condemn him outright. But I looked at the footage, I watched it second by second. I watched where people were going, when they were going, what actually happened. The dude's being attacked. He's running away. He's fulfilled his duty to retreat. So that day when I went on, I said in absolute confidence, just about 12 hours after the event itself, saying Kyle Rittenhouse is absolutely innocent. The killings were absolutely appropriate and justified and brilliant, actually. And actually, it's amazing that the dude didn't kill more people or like panic and just start firing at everybody. I mean, like almost surgical precision with, you know, how he wielded his weapon that day. And you could tell that if you actually looked at the footage. So then when it comes time to the trial and it's these big voices on both sides, half of them think it's illegal, half of them, it didn't matter because like we had figured it out. We had decided what had happened. We have principles which say you can't just go up and shoot people. You can't just murder people. But if you're attacked first, if they try to take your gun, absolutely, you have a right. He was on the right side of the law. He's on the right side of justice. That's it. So it's a little bit different now. Yeah, sanity is treason in the empire of the insane. Now, it's just everybody is insane. Everybody's insane. Everybody is, you know, playing with these life and death circumstances as if they're like a popularity contest to win. And everybody is genuinely insane. And I say this because, in a way, you could see from a leftist perspective how it'd be like, well, you think it's ridiculous these women are supporting it. Well, you supported Kyle Rittenhouse. And I'm explaining why. It's because, like, well, he was innocent. So I'm going to support him, obviously. This woman is not innocent. And nobody in or around the case says she's innocent. She doesn't say she's innocent. They all acknowledge it. She has pled guilty. She has admitted to killing her children. Just like Carmelo Anthony, there was never a circumstance in which he was not guilty of murder. There was no untold story that, oh, it's going to, a video is going to come out and it's going to show Carmelo Anthony was about to be killed, so he acted in self-defense. That was never going to happen. It was never even a possibility. I don't even think it was really suggested. I think in the case of Carmelo Anthony, it was straight up just like, I mean, really, it's one of two options. Either it was people just straight up being like, we like that you killed a white person. Here's some money. You know, we want to support you because you're a black person. And they didn't even, you know, make a pretense of believing he was innocent or believing that it was a setup or anything like that. And then the other half of the people, I think, are just lying. I think they're just lying. I think they just like, you know, with Carmelo Anthony, they know he didn't. It wasn't self-defense. They know he just went up and murdered a guy. They have to. Because that's the facts, and there's never been facts presented to the contrary. But they pretend, but they feel like they're winning a clever little game if they support the murderer. Again, I'm just trying to figure out, because with a lot of things, even if I disagree and know that the people are wrong, like Kyle Rittenhouse, I can still understand, ostensibly, these people are misinformed. If you look at the bare facts, then you could present it as, here's a kid, he crossed state lines with a gun, and then he showed up at a Black Lives Matter protest, and three people end up dead, and he walks away. I mean, sounds kind of bad to me. So I don't, you know, I'll just say you're wrong. I'll just be like, you know, well, you need to look into it more, or you're biased about this, or, you know, whatever else. But I at least have something logical, something consistent, something there to seize onto to go, okay, this is what is guiding this person's thought process. Then you get to Carmelo Anthony and you get to, what's her name, Lindsay Clancy. There's no logic. There's no chain of events to follow back and to identify where it went off the trail, where it went off the path of truth towards the path of lies. It's just all lies. It's just madness, insanity. And I really genuinely, I don't know how you deal with this. I don't know what you do about this. I don't think you can argue with these people. Because they're not making their decisions based on facts. They're not making their decision based off of anything, really. And I used to say it more, it kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's like, you've got to leave the conspiracy theorizing to the professionals. I'm sorry, but like, a lot of people out there think that they, you know, they learn a little something about what's going on behind the curtain. They get a little peek at the Wizard of Oz, and suddenly they think they're like experts in figuring out the truth about everything. And I'm here to tell you, in absolute 100% certainty, no doubt, even possible. Like, you're wrong, right? I can say this personally when people are like, oh, well, I know why you're saying that. You're paid by Russia. You're doing Dugin's work or whatever. I'm like, I've never even read that. I don't even know who that is. What the hell are you talking about? So, you know, y'all can take my word for it or not. But trust me. There's a lot of people online very confident in their ability to identify falsehood, and they're just abjectly wrong. Which is like, that's fine, you know. But what if everybody not only now questions the official story, but just is completely unmoored from reality at any point? There's no tether. There's no connection. There's no thought process. There's no evidence. It's just pure speculation, projection, insanity. I mean, in a word, it's insanity. Like I said, I don't know how we deal with this. I know how you don't deal with insanity. Medication. You don't deal with it in medication because that keeps causing people to become murderers. So here's the actual story, in case you haven't heard the whole thing. Medical providers who previously treated Lindsay Clancy took to the stand in her murder trial to testify about medications they prescribed to the Massachusetts mother in the months before she allegedly strangled three children to death. Clancy's prescription medication, this use, has been a focal point of the trial, which began in late July. Prosecutors argue that Clancy manipulated her providers and sought quick fixes for her depression and anxiety. Clancy's defense argues that she repeatedly sought treatment and was over-medicated before the killings. In January 2023, Clancy allegedly killed her three children. a 5, a 3, and an 8, 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and an 8-month-old by strangling them with exercise bands in her Duxbury, Massachusetts home. Afterwards, Clancy cut her wrists and neck and jumped out of a second-story window, leaving her paralyzed. Clancy, who turned 36 on August 11th, has pled not guilty to all three counts. Oh, I thought, but she did confess to it. Oh, not guilty by reason of insanity, of course. Her defense argues that Clancy lacks criminal responsibility because she was suffering from postpartum depression and psychosis at the time of the killings, also known as the insanity defense. And I'm not sure if it printed out, but I believe it is on this article. If you scroll down a little bit more, you'll get actually the list of medications, and you can see just how many there were. Although, I'm not sure if this is a full list or not, but even so, it's pretty massive. Keep going. You'll see it here. It's just under this section here, under the video. So, this is the prescription medication list for September 2022 through January 2023. This is Lindsay Clancy's CVS patient prescription record and list presented by her defense. So you have Sertaline, which is Zoloft, 25 milligrams, lorazepam, which, brand name Ativan, multiple doses for that, hydroxyzine, Atarax Vistaril, I'm not even going to be able to pronounce these things, Buspar, which is an anxiolytic. I don't even know how to pronounce most of these things. Trazodone, 50 milligrams, 150 milligrams, 50 milligrams, 5 milligrams. Fluxetine, Prozac, Ambien, Remeron, Klonopin, Seroquel. All of these things in a, 3-month period? Valium, Lamictal, Elavil. So, I mean, what the hell? How many is that? So here, scroll up. We'll do it from the top. Elavil, Valium. I mean, 20 different medicines? SSRIs, antidepressants, uppers, downers. It's like, oh, I think I found the problem here. I think I've identified the problem. 13 distinct medicines. Each one with multiple doses and variations. You know the person who killed her kids? The American medical industry killed her children. The insanity of the American medical system. Sertaline, lorazepam, hydroxyzine, lorazepam, buspirone. So this is them in order. So you can see just like, I mean, This is once a week. The 2nd, the 9th, the 16th, the 21st, the 25th, the 25th, the 25th, the 30th. So she had a weekly checkup where she was getting a new prescription every week with I guess, checkups in between. She got a prescription on the 7th and the 6th and the 9th and another one on the 7th and the 13th and the 17th and the 19th. Again on the 19th and the 21st and the 22nd. I mean, yeah, maybe these doctors should be, like, asked about this. Now, they're trying to blame her, basically, I guess, saying that, you know, they didn't know. Maybe she had two different doctors and she was going to one and then the other and not telling them that she was seeing another doctor. Okay, maybe some of that. But, like, you could isolate just one of those doctors. It's still an exceedingly ridiculous number of medications that she was prescribed. And this is not exactly atypical. This is kind of how American medical industry works. They prescribe one thing to fix a problem, that is, mask a symptom. Then that causes other symptoms, so you prescribe them other things to mask those symptoms. And then when you're on those drugs, you can't sleep, so you got to have a sleep medication. But the sleep medication doesn't work with the first, so you got to do two other. Insanity. It's insanity. Who would design a medical industry like this? Who would design a medical system like this? If you go back in time 100 years ago and tell people this is the future of medicine, they wouldn't believe you because it's a joke. It's just not a funny one. It's a tragic joke. Two psychiatric nurse practitioners in the South Shore Perinatal Behavioral Health Clinic, Julie Paul and Rebecca Gelodi, also prescribed medication to Clancy. Paul, who left the practice in December 2022, briefly saw Clancy in November before transferring her care to Gelada. Dr. Aaliyah Goodhart, a psychiatrist at McLean Hospital, the psychiatric hospital where Clancy was admitted for 5 days in January 2023, also testified about her medication use on the 7th. Tufton and Gelada are both named as defendants in a separate civil medical malpractice lawsuits filed by Clancy and her ex-husband, Patrick Clancy. But see, the problem is you've got, like, obviously a bunch of things going wrong. Obviously, she was not well. Obviously, the medications didn't help and obviously made things worse. It's hard to, you know, say where exactly the blame lies, but she's not innocent in all of this. However, I guess this is sort of the problem with the modern world. She did what she was supposed to, according to our culture. She did what every wine mom out there would have told her to do. If she went to your aunt, if she went to your average, you know, boomer normie and was like, my doctor's prescribing me all this stuff, you think they'd say, oh, don't take, oh, that stuff's bad. You need to stay away from that. You need a holistic. But no, they'd say, they're a doctor, sweetie. You do what they say. They're in the white coats. They know what's best for you. You just make sure you follow directions and make sure you finish that course before you start the next one. That's the mindset. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, right? What did she do wrong? She trusted her doctor. She did what they said. So again, not to say that she does not have culpability in this. She murdered her children. I think she should get the death penalty. Why not? Rest her life in prison, at least. But I do think there's a problem with living in an empire of the insane, where this is our medical industry. And you have to, like, reject the professional advice of people who went to school for 8 years for this. You're supposed to, like, think that you know better than them. And it's like, this sucks. Why can we not have a system where we can trust our authorities? Why can we not have a system where the medications actually do what they say and don't cause you to murder children? Is this possible? I believe in a world where medicines don't make you murder your children. I think it's possible. I think we could do it. I just think not in this world, not in the current time period. Everything is going in this direction and it is completely insane. But on top of that, you have the Serial effect. Remember that show Serial? Total, you know, cultural flashpoint. Really, like, actually put podcasts on the map. It came out once a week. And the whole philosophy of the whole thing was this murderer who killed his girlfriend, he might be innocent because he's charming. That was kind of the argument. It was kind of like, he's a nice guy. It's kind of like this weird, you know, sort of the host is just kind of a woman from the city that's just like, but he's so nice though. But he smiled at me. How could he be a murderer? I don't get it. And it's like, there was never any evidence that he wasn't the murderer. All the evidence went in one direction, directly towards him. I remember listening to this at the time and being so confused, being like, the tone of this is as if they're proving his innocence, but I don't see any proof for his innocence in any of this. To be honest, people are going to be mad at me for making this comparison, but very similar to the feeling I have watching Candace Owens. Where you go, the whole tone of this is like, we're busting the narrative. We're establishing the alternative timeline that's actually the truth. We're exposing corruption. But then if you listen to it, you're like, none of that has actually happened. All of the actual tangible evidence that's ever presented, and it just convinces me the guy's a murderer. But this became a phenomenon. This, of course, had major mainstream support. It was tied into NPR. It was the producer who made Serial was from This American Life, a really, you know, famous leftist program. But ever since then, there's been this true crime deluge. And this is why I say leave the conspiracy theorizing to the professionals. People now are like, think that they're finding all of these little clues and think that they're finding body language that proves somebody's guilty. So you literally have women posting pictures of the husband and it's just his face. And it's them like, why do I think she's innocent? Here's why. And it's just a picture of the husband. And it's like, so we're at the point now where adults, supposedly ensouled, supposedly they have souls. This is the rumor I'm hearing, although I've yet see evidence of it. You have adult human beings saying, I think this murderer is innocent and it was actually her husband. Why? I don't like his face. And they think that's valid. They think that's like a good reason. Now, to take the steel man of this, or to try to explain to these people, like, you're missing some crucial steps here. Okay. Let me explain how this would normally go. Somebody's facial expression, or the way they look, or the vibe you get off them. Because I see that a lot. I've been looking into this, and it's just like comments being like, I can tell he's a narcissist. I used to date one. It's like, okay, lady. And literally, it's just like, I can tell. The way he looks at her, I can tell he's a narcissist. It's like, you think he's looking at the woman who murdered his children, and he's not, what, smiling at her? He's not beaming at her? He's glaring at her because she, I don't know, killed his children? Regardless, these things might be a point of interest. That might be a reason you say, that guy's not making the right maybe we should look into that guy. Then you look into him, and if there's nothing there, then you say, okay, dude made a weird expression. Do I need to explain that again? Because apparently this is very complicated. This is too confusing. That the way you feel about somebody is not actually a valid reason to claim that they murdered somebody. It is a valid reason, can be a valid reason, to have a personal suspicion of somebody that then needs to be investigated and backed up with actual evidence. But we're missing that part of the whole process. And so you now have women who murdered their children getting $1 million for this. Again, compared to other things, compared to Shiloh Hendricks, she got a lot of money in her Gives and Go, or Chud the Builder. He fundraised a bunch of money, but not because people thought it was somebody else that did it, right? Not because of some insane, it's because there's like a principle here and it's not illegal to say a word and they're trying to charge somebody. They're trying to destroy the First Amendment. There's like a principle at stake. There's like something there, but they're just giving $1 million to Carmelo Anthony for stabbing a kid in the chest, or to this woman for strangling her children. And they have no evidence that it's not them. They're just okay with supporting murderers. So what do we do about that? I'm open to suggestions, because I got no suggestions other than, like, I don't know, totalitarianism. That's like the scary thing. It's like, all my life, I've been like searching out sort of the secrets behind the scenes, like trying to find out the truth of it. And truly, genuinely, and still, I do believe, like, the truth needs to be out there. Like, people can handle it. You can put it out there. But now we're in this weird no man's land, this weird sort of extra dimension where it's like you're supposed to not question things, but people question things they have no reason to actually question because they think it's winning some cultural battle, or they don't even understand the cultural battle, but just have imbued this stuff so much they see the world through a lens they don't even realize has been tinted to the point of blindness. It's like, maybe some humility, maybe a little bit of humility is necessary, because I don't know what else to say other than, like, some people just, maybe they shouldn't have access to doubt. You know, it's like, maybe like some people, you just need to listen to the authorities. Okay. Some of you people, if you think that this mother is innocent, if you've donated money to her, if you think there's even a question about it, maybe you shouldn't get to think for yourself. I don't know. I don't know how we do that, but maybe you shouldn't be allowed to come to conclusions, because you're not very good at it. I don't know how to enforce that. I just know everyone is insane now, and it's throwing the awakening off the rails. It's throwing everything off the rails. It's throwing me off the rails. And I like being on the rails. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks.
Hey, I think this is my favorite Alex Jones shirt.
Dude, I totally agree.
Founding Fathers on patrol. Washington and Lincoln rocking the latest Alex Jones shirt. Marching past America's monuments. Liberty is awake. Visit thealexjonesstore.com now.
دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Friends, has your water been acting a little suspicious lately? Does it taste like it took a wrong turn through a garden hose on the way to your kitchen? Well, don't panic. Introducing the dual carbon gravity water filter.
Gee whiz, it sparkles like diamonds in the sunshine. No more of that yucky, murky tap stuff that tastes like it came straight from the old rusty pipes.
This water is so good.
It's the best ever.
I'm so glad. Fresh water is important.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Drink up.
We will.
Wow, that sure is a fine-looking water filter.
You know I'd never do you wrong, Lucy. This is top of the line, I tell you.
Oh, I believe you.
Just you wait and see. I just know Ricky will love it.
I can't wait till he gets home.
He'll be so impressed.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
Come in the kitchen, dear. I want to show you something.
Oh, boy, that tastes great. You can always trust good old Alex.
Another satisfied customer.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Cliff that kills you, it's the ground. We still got some time. We're over the cliff, but we got a while. Hopefully we can climb back up. But I'm really struggling with how to deal with this stuff, and it's not exactly new. And I've sort of felt this the whole time that I've done a show on InfoWars. I didn't necessarily feel it at the beginning when I was there for the first few years, because the awakening was still happening. But it's this idea of, like, the awakening has happened, the floodgates have opened, but now it's almost like we got to be the sheepdogs, not just to guard the flock, but to sort of go, all right, you know, things might not have been like you thought, but there are still some guardrails. There's still physical reality. There's still, like, spiritual reality. Like, these things still exist. And it's like, so now we got to not just, like, awaken people, but, like, awaken people and calm them down at the same time, if you see what I mean. Because everybody, like I said, I mean, look, I can't get into it for legal reasons. But, I mean, just think about the difference between 2012 and now. Think about the difference between, like, major public events and how people treat them, and that, you know, it was not that long ago. It was like a little over a decade ago that, like, if you questioned 9/11 or you questioned vaccines, I mean, you were like an insane person. Nobody would want to be friends with you. You were nuts. Now it's like people laughing at the death of Charlie Kirk. And it's just like, they don't think it's fake. They just think it's funny. It's just like, okay. So everybody's just like, gone completely off the rails and is totally unmoored and insane. Now, it's not saying that, you know, something's gone wrong and we need to go back to the controlled system. I was saying that sort of facetiously in the last segment. Yeah, this footage is awesome. We got to take, I'm just going to be watching the sheepdog footage now. Maybe that's what I should do with my life. Maybe I should live on a farm in Scotland. Just get the hell away from all this crap. But I was thinking about the cave. I was thinking about Plato's cave, classic, you know, metaphor, whatever it's called. The Matrix is largely based off of it, but, you know, it's just a sort of recurring theme that we constantly see. We played a really good video explaining it yesterday. But if you think about Plato's cave, how do you defeat Plato's cave? Because the only way to do it is to take over the shadows. That's the only way to defeat Plato's cave. And I said this online, and other people were like, why wouldn't you just knock the wall down? And it's like, because then the prisoners who genuinely believe the shadow puppets are the entire world, they will think you destroyed the world. They're not going to like you. They're going to think you're a monster that destroyed the world. They're going to hate and fear you. Oh, well, you know, you should just open up the door and let the sunlight flood in. Oh, why? So you can blind and hurt them? Somebody who's been in darkness all their life, you shove them into the sun, they're going to feel like you're attacking them. They're going to be blinded and burned and hate you again for forcing them. So how would you actually do it? If you actually, you know, if the cave was real and you escaped and saw the sunlight, that's not really the difficult part. The difficult part is going back in. The difficult part is getting other people out because they don't want to go out and it's scary. So the only way to actually defeat the cave is to become the shadow puppeteer so you can then use the shadows on the wall to show the prisoners a narrative of what has happened to them. You can actually talk to them in a language they can understand, and you can explain to them through the shadow puppets the reality of their world. And only then will they actually be able to comprehend and understand what's happening when you open up the door and flood them with sunlight. But you'd have to prepare them for that. So, and I think that's very applicable here in America today in the media landscape and the political landscape. It's like we've escaped the cave, and then we go back into the cave to try to free everybody else. And it turns out that, like, everybody's insane. Everybody's like, the shadows are everywhere and there's sunlight flooding in. Everybody's blind and running around like eating each other. It's like, well, that didn't work. The cave might have been better, actually. Can we get chained to the wall again? That was better than eating.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live, broadcasting just outside the cave, trying to get our signal into the cave to wake people up and free them. It's got to be by your own volition, folks. I do hope you can support this mission. Obviously, had a great conversation myself with Joel Webbin in the first hour. Alex spent an hour talking to Joel Webbin as well. Pushed the conference a lot. Cannot encourage you enough if you've got the time. If you're not doing anything, that Thursday through Saturday, November 12th through 14th, if you can make it to Dallas, Texas, and be a part of the New Christian Right Conference, definitely hope to see you there. There's lots of promo codes to use. Today, the promo code, FISHBACK, all one word, all capital. Go to newchristianright.com/conference. Use that promo code, FISHBACK. You get 40% off. That's today only. Or if you want to send them Alex Jones's way, you go to... use the promo code Alex Jones, all one word, or you can use promo code Harrison, all one word. Regardless, love to see you there. And looking very much forward to that. But we haven't plugged the store very much, and that's where the bread is buttered. So folks, you gotta go to the alexjonesstore.com. And again, with all this drama that we're not gonna get into, I'm not gonna talk about Tim Pool and the quartering anymore. But however, there's a pretty big difference between what we do and what they do. There's a big reason why we're under attack and that they're not. There's a reason that we're effective where they are influencers. TheAlexJonesStore.com is the secret engine of that. It's not exactly secret, but that's what has facilitated all of this. Without TheAlexJonesStore.com, if we'd relied on the internet, if we'd relied on Patreon or whatever else, we wouldn't be here. If we relied on sponsors, we wouldn't be here. It's the AlexJonesStore.com. not just a one-stop shop for all of this incredible patriotic merchandise and the great supplements and the deals and the free cars you can win and the free gifts like the tallow that you get with anything over $99 and the VIP subscription. We've got knives. We've got magnet mounts for your gun under the table in your closet. Colostrum, 72% off. It's not just all of that. It's the fact that it has made us totally independent, like totally unmoored. Like they cannot cut off our electricity. We're battery powered. We have you, the American people. As long as you support us, we will continue on our mission. We will continue to shatter the paradigm and reorganize the media landscape. And I said yesterday on X, like when it comes to when you're comparing these people like Tim Pool and Alex Jones, I mean, Alex Jones is like Godzilla. He's like the monster that's taller than the skyscraper that's just wrecking everything and absorbing, you know, nuclear strikes and the tanks. He doesn't even notice they're firing missiles at him. He's just enraged and destroying everything around him. Meanwhile, these other guys, they're like the little Japanese people in the crowd running and screaming, running away. You know, I'm not even saying that to pump myself. I'm not Alex Jones, but I got respect for a man that has forcibly reorganized the media landscape for the last 30 years. A man who has impacted presidential races and they've written new laws. They broke their own terms of service and shattered social media control to get rid of him. It's a little conceited to me. It's a little out of whack to have people who are literally streamers who literally just sit in their room and stream a couple hours a day and really only got big at all because there was a giant vacuum when Alex Jones was kicked off of YouTube that certain people slithered right into. But the idea that Tim Pool, I mean, the cultural impact, the just philosophical impact that Alex Jones has had, the political impact, I mean, it is unparalleled. And you don't have to listen to me. Our greatest enemies tell us this. We've played the video. They had experts, disinformation experts, testifying at the Sandy Hook trial to just how influential Alex Jones was. And I believe the way they put it was more influential than Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck combined, who were the next two most influential names. So it's like Tim Pool, Beanie Boy. Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, he and Alex Jones are fighting, are they? It's like, what was that? Some movie that had the short film Godzilla versus Bambi. Guys, see if you can find Godzilla versus Bambi. Y'all never seen that. It's pretty good cinematic portrayal of what happens anytime one of these guys goes up against Alex Jones. Tell me when you get that video. So I really do. I mean, what we do here is well, it ain't this. It ain't whatever this is, that's for sure. It ain't whatever you're seeing on screen right now. And look, we don't have the ability to force people one way or the other. And we have our role here. It is to inform you. It is try to get out ahead of stories so that you know what's happening before it even happens, so that you can understand the underlying currents that are moving things forward, like I was rambling about yesterday. How you could tell the whole story of the Iraq war without ever mentioning 9/11, and everything is kind of like that. That you could talk about illegal immigration and completely miss the whole point of it and actually provide a pretty reasonable, justifiable, believable explanation, but you're missing the most important parts. So we try to give you those important parts, try to let you know what's actually motivating a lot of this stuff. But that being said, that's sort of where our role by necessity ends. In other words, I can bring people on to tell you about private equity. I can tell you what I know about private equity. We can speculate as to what may be in the future for private equity. But until you vote for people who run on a platform of restraining private equity, it doesn't matter. And that's the whole point of what we do here. It's why it's an information war. The information is the ammunition that you need, but then you need to put it into action. And changes need to happen. Laws need to be written. People need to come together to express their collective power, to enforce their viewpoint, not just talk about it. So I'll go to a video here in just a second. But first, we have Alex Jones versus the Quartering, a little recap of the debate earlier today. Let's watch. Why you said Godzilla? This is the Godzilla video. That's the Quartering. I don't know when the last time I watched this. Maybe I should have watched it before playing it on the air. This might not be the best thing to air, but yeah, whatever. We're doing it. We're doing it live. That's what we do here, right? How long is this? Do you know? I remember being about... Screenplay by Marv Newland. This is the Quartering waiting on the Zoom call to be brought in. We should have Alex Jones, voice in the background coming through the earpiece. I remember this video being like 10 seconds long. What is this? This just keeps going and going. So no, there it is. The end. Was that worth it? I don't know. I thought it was funny. Have you ever seen that before? That's what I think of every time I think of Alex Jones debating one of the influencers, one of the TikTokers or the Twitch streamers. Yeah, it's Godzilla versus Bambi. All right, but we'll get serious here. Because this is one of these instances. And I sort of gave it away already. I was thinking about maybe doing this in a more clever way. But clip number 7 here. I'm watching this video, and it's about 5 minutes long, but it's good. It explains what's going on here. And it was about a minute in that I just started hearing the word private equity. Private equity. This is private equity doing this, isn't it? Because what you're about to hear makes no sense without private equity as that crucial ingredient making it all make sense. It's that, it's not just the puzzle piece. It's like the image on the puzzle box that lets you know what the hell you're even looking at. Because once again, you could hear this story. You're about to hear a story about a neonatal division of a hospital being completely destroyed for no reason, putting the life of newborn babies at risk. And as you hear this story, it doesn't make any sense. And you're like, there must be something missing here. Because nothing explains the decisions being made unless you've been following our reporting about private equity, in which case, the first time he starts talking about what happened, the alarm bell should have been going off in your mind saying, I bet this was private equity. And sure enough, about 2 or 3 minutes in, private equity enters the picture. So this is what our purpose is here. To try desperately to warn you about the threats coming down the pipe, warn you about the machinations of those in power and the methods by which they seek to extend and enforce that power, impose that power upon you. But now it's up to regular people to recognize this and then put it into action and make moves against this. So if you've ever seen our content with Tiffany Cianci, if you haven't searched Tiffany Cianci, we've done hours of content with her specifically about private equity, specifically about the fact that these private equity companies buy successful industries, successful organizations. They gather up things like Joann's Fabric. 98% of their stores were profitable, and yet it goes bankrupt because private equity comes in, strips it for parts, makes it totally dysfunctional, and then closes it down. And this is just, they're just allowed to do this. They shouldn't be allowed to do it no matter what. They shouldn't be allowed to do it with fabric stores. They shouldn't be allowed to do it with shoe stores or trampoline parks. They certainly shouldn't be allowed to do it with hospitals. Because what ends up is something like this, where you have a neonatal program basically eviscerated, and nobody even knows why, because everything private equity does is completely opaque behind this wall of private settlements in these settlement courts. So let's watch the video now. Clip number 7, Asante Medical Center fires 9 neonatologists and uses temporary staff after physicians raised patient safety concerns. And it's private equity.
With the only neonatal ICU serving a population of 600,000, what would compel leadership at that hospital to fire all 9 of their neonatologists? That's the question a lot of people are asking leadership at Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center in Medford, Oregon. It's story time. On January 29th of this year, all the neonatologists were suddenly informed that as of July 1st, they would no longer be employed by Asante. Let me tell you how impressive this group is. They've been staffing the NICU for over 20 years. Other than retirements, nobody has left. Incredibly stable, never missed a shift. Over the past decade, they've expanded the level of care locally, including resuscitation guidelines for infants born as early as 22 weeks. They've also improved outcomes year over year, according to national benchmarking data. So I tell you, this group is good. Like, they're good. Needless to say, this was a shock, including to the nurses who work in the NICU. Like, they're tight. Everybody who works in the NICU, they're tight. They are protective over each other. They are protective over those babies. Like, you don't mess with the NICU. And I never go to a NICU. Even I know you don't mess with anything in the NICU, especially one that's performing as well as this one. And just to give you a sense of what this NICU means to these physicians, this is a very touching Facebook post by Dr. Towns, one of the neonatologists. She posted shortly after learning they were getting fired. Please pause and read this, because this is the type of dedication to patient care that Asante was willing to lose. So now the million-dollar question. Why? Well, you'll be shocked to know we don't have a good answer. Initially, Asante cited the neonatologist's, quote, loss of trust in Asante administrative leadership. Now, this stems from events that have happened over the last couple of years. In 2023, Asante implemented widespread institutional changes, basically a new administration, including a new CEO. Shortly after, the neonatologist began raising concerns about patient safety, including staffing reductions and decisions affecting clinical care that were made without any meaningful input from the neonatologist. And I don't know about you guys, but if there's one place in the hospital you don't want administrators meddling in patient care, it's the neonatal ICU. Some of those staffing reductions included the elimination of clinical and educational positions that actually put the NICU out of alignment with the AAP and CMS requirements.
All right, so if we can pause it right there, you know, we'll come back to this. But already, like, this was about the time that I'm like, private equity. It's private equity. That's the only thing that explains it. And this is why you have poll results that show Democrats favor socialism over capitalism 58 to 35 or whatever it is. Because this is capitalism now. And look, you don't have to be a socialist to understand that the point of a hospital is not to line the pockets of the investors. That is completely like at this point, yeah, maybe we should just have government. I can't even bring myself to say it. Okay, we shouldn't have government health care. Okay, I'm just like, as I'm saying it, I'm seeing like the NHS. I'm picturing like the story from Connor Tomlinson of like his pregnant wife not being able to be looked at because the emergency room is filled with Pakistanis with a head cold. Okay, so I definitely don't want government-controlled healthcare, God forbid. But, like, I don't want capitalist-controlled healthcare either. It's sort of a theme today, I guess, unintentionally, the insanity of the healthcare system in this country. But you'll see. Well, we'll keep playing it because, you know, he gets into the private equity. But already by this point, it's like, okay, they got a new owner. And the owner decided certain things were superfluous, like education or the neonatal division. And it's like, yeah, that's private equity. The only people that would think that that's a good idea is private equity, because it's not about the long-term value of a possession. It's not about how do we make this hospital the best hospital it can be, because if we have this massive survival rate and we have these, you know, incredible commendations for our care for neonatal, then we'll have more investment, more people will want to come here. You know, if we rescue some baby because we're just the best of the best and their, you know, rich uncle donates another wing to the hospital. I mean, that stuff happens all the time. You would know if this was a long-term investment, if you actually wanted to make the best hospital, even if it was just a capitalistic endeavor, if that was your ultimate goal, you would not go around cutting every single dollar you can possibly justify to the point that you're not even fulfilling the requirements that the regulations lay out for you to even operate. Only private equity does this. So, like, if we can't put a stop to these excesses, if we can't have some sort of law that says if you're going to buy a hospital, you have to actually run a hospital. You can't just sell it for parts and leave the people of that area without hospital care for their newborn babies. This is a total abuse and a total violation of the societal contract that we're all supposed to abide by, and that ideally would be abided by everybody, so we wouldn't need laws to come in and enforce it. But when your entire society is run by the most avaricious, rapacious, scumbag, money-greedy capitalists, you're going to get people going, I don't care what we go to, let's stop doing this, because whatever this is clearly and inarguably evil. So let's continue as we see the way private equity basically is a, you know, it's this hospital is now entered into the feedback loop where they're now making cuts, which is going to make people upset. Those people are complaining. So then those people get fired. So then more people are upset. I mean, they're now in the feedback loop. They're now spiraling down the drain. And this isn't just a trampoline park that can be shuttered and sorry, you got to reschedule your kid's birthday somewhere else. This is the primary hospital for 600,000 Americans. And they're gutting it for parts. And they're being allowed to gut it for parts. Let's keep watching.
Multiple medical groups staffing Asante sent letters to the board of directors talking about how this new administration was making decisions that were affecting patient care. Fast forward 2 years and the neonatologists are terminated. And then a few weeks later, the hospitalist group that staffs Asante was told that their contract will not be renewed in 2027. Now, we've heard nothing from Asante to suggest this was a retaliatory decision, but that's the problem. The lack of explanation leaves us guessing. For the past 6 months, Asante leadership has said the firing of the neonatologist was not a financial decision, but they also said it's just a business decision. They've also said that there were no concerns about the quality of care provided by the neonatologists. Amidst all these conflicting statements, Asante decided to partner with Medicus Healthcare Solutions, a national healthcare staffing company backed by private equity, by the way, because of course they are, to provide locums positions in anticipation of these 9 neonatologists getting canned in July. Now, why would Asante throw this massive wrench into a well-oiled machine of a NICU by firing all the neonatologists who are well-respected and had great outcomes just to hire a bunch of locums positions? Just doesn't make sense. Well, maybe Dr. Jennifer Davenport, Vice President of Medical Affairs at Asante, can explain it to us.
One of the examples that we had is we had a NICU group that was just working their tails off, couldn't really recruit into it as people started to retire and move on. And so we had to take a purposeful step back and design the model that we wanted. And that's where we really work with Medicus for a transition type team.
This was a panel hosted by Medicus in April. She's straight up lying. There was no instability in this group. The last retirement was in 2021. Asante went to Medicus because they fired all the neonatologists, apparently, without a plan. Now here we are in August. All 9 of those neonatologists are gone, with no permanent replacements. Now to be clear, the neonatologists do not want this to be an indictment of the locums doctors currently staffing the NICU. This is on Asante for creating this kind of instability in a very challenging and sensitive and important part of the hospital ecosystem. And the only reason we have all this information that I've laid out to you is because of a press release published by those 9 neonatologists on August 10th. Why'd they have to wait till now to talk about this? Because from January till they were officially fired in July, they were subject to Asante's media policy. They were reminded that they were not authorized to speak to the media or on behalf of Asante and were instructed not to answer questions or engage if contacted by reporters. The now fired neonatologists closed out their press release with a list of asks. Please read them. They want accountability and transparency. And what jumps out to me, they're not asking for their jobs back. All they want is to protect the NICU that they have worked so hard to build. Asante does not deserve those 9 neonatologists. The community does.
So again, it's just sort of a typical story, an all too typical story these days of private equity coming in, purchasing a hospital, purchasing an industry of some sort, and just gutting it for parts against, you know, the advice of the people who it affects, against the customer's wishes, against their own bottom line at the end of the day, if you're looking at it in a long-term fashion, if you're looking to actually build up and establish a thriving company, then you wouldn't make these decisions. If instead you're trying to chop it up to sell it for parts, make a quick buck and destroy a bunch of people's lives in the process, then I guess this is a great move, very clever move they've carried off here. So again, we can tell you about private equity. I can't do anything about it. Only you can. Only you can advocate against private equity. Only you can get your friends together and go do a protest or go talk to your city council or go talk to your state legislature and get bills passed to stop this crap from happening. Clearly, the federal level is completely in bed with private equity, absolutely hand in glove with selling out the American people piece by piece to the highest bidder so we can be stripped for parts and left to rot. Maybe the local government could stand up against this, just like we did with the data centers. But we've got to do something, because failure to do anything essentially guarantees that either we go to the corporate private equity route of just de facto enslavement, or the excesses and outrages of the capitalistic private equity class get capitalized on politically and we go socialist and communist. Either way, it's hell for us. So how about we stand up against this for once? What do we say, Republicans?
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system. Even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots, and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of War Room Live. I frankly don't know if I'm not going to open up the phone lines. I said I would, but I got so much still to cover, including a lot of videos to get to. I'm just not going to have time, and I don't want to make people wait on hold if I'm not actually going to be able to get to them. Everything is just completely insane. For one thing, answering the question I posed earlier about, you know, why everybody is insane now, this might go some way in explaining that. Shocking number of Gen Z shut-ins report zero face-to-face interaction per day after COVID. Nearly 10% of Generation Z say they had zero face-to-face interaction with another person in their daily life, according to an analysis of U.S. Census data by the Financial Times. This dangerous trend was triggered by COVID pandemic when millions of young people were kept stuck inside during the years spent developing crucial social skills. The American Time Use survey suggested that a shocking number of these young people, aged 23 to 29, have not recovered. In 2019, the last year before the pandemic, only 3% of young adults weren't socializing face-to-face on a daily basis, but by the time COVID restrictions had eased in late 2021, that figure was almost 9%. The figure peaked at 10% in 2023 before ticking slightly down in 2024 and 2025. And where the most socially active segment of young people saw their social lives rebound following the pandemic, for the bottom quarter, they have not. Before 2020, the most socially connected segment of young adults used to spend 87% of their day with other people. That figure dropped to about 78% during COVID restrictions before rising to 83% as of 2025. But for the most isolated segment of the young adult population, who used to spend roughly a third of their day with others, that figure collapsed essentially to zero during the pandemic and has stayed there ever since. Because the pandemic was a physical but also deeply psychological attack on the American people, and that outcome was deliberate in my interpretation. Why else would you have things like this? And that this was one of the things reposted that I think is worth it to remind you of where we were already. Not where we're going. Not what could potentially happen. I am not Alex Jones in 2005 warning you of what's coming. I'm Harrison Smith in 2026 telling you, reminding you, trying to get you to remember that this already happened to us 6 years ago here in America. From CNN on April 10th, 2020. Kentucky will record license plates of those who show up to any mass gatherings, such as church services, and will provide that info to local health departments, who will in turn order those individuals to be quarantined for 14 days, Governor Andy Beshear says. We've already been here. This is a real tweet that is still up. And I'm sure we pointed out at the time, but not a coincidence they use church services as the example that they give. You know, mass gatherings like church services. This already happened, folks. So now imagine this with Flock added to it, with the Ring camera surveillance accessible in a Palantir interface, with your biometric identity tied to your physical presence everywhere that you go, so that, I mean, they wouldn't have to send orders to quarantine you for 14 days. You would just get a text on your phone letting you know that your door's not going to unlock for the next 2 weeks. So it feels very weird. It feels very weird to be like ringing the bell, sounding the alarm, and it's like not to be believed when it's like, no, this has already happened before. We're saying it's going to happen again because the people who did this to us weren't punished for it. They set a precedent. They got away with it. They're going to do it again. They're getting ready. They're building their panopticon. It won't be suggestions next time. You have to stop them now. We have to stop them now, you understand. Once it's built, you can't stop it anymore. We have to stop them now. And it's sort of like imperative existential that we do. Sort of. So let's get into you know, what's actually happening with MAGA right now. We'll start off with something good. We can start with a victory here, or at least perhaps a symbol, a signal that the Trump administration here in the final few minutes before the midterm are really getting serious about all this. MAGA win from AlexJonesLive.com. Trump admin now restricting all legal immigration categories. Well, fantastic. Again, yet another, we should have a category that's just like headlines that would have been great to read in January of 2025. Headlines that were appropriate and would have meant something great if they'd happened a year ago, at least. Maybe a little more. Now, maybe a little too late. It might be too little too late at this point. White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller is leading an ongoing effort to restrict methods of foreigners use that foreigners use to immigrate into the U.S. amid the New World Order. The New World Order replacement migration operation. Oh, okay. That's our language. Okay, got it. I was the fact that it had capitals, I was thinking that this was all right. We call it, Alex Jones Live called it the New World Order replacement migration operation. For a second there, I was like, wait, they called it the New World Order replacement migration operation? No, that's us. Sorry. I was shocked for a moment. I actually thought for a single moment that something had been honestly labeled in the official record, but that was stupid of me. Should have known it was us. The Trump administration is restricting all legal immigration categories in an effort to reduce the flow of immigrants to America, Forbes said Monday. The mechanisms the Trump administration is using to reduce the foreign influx include application freezes, a stricter public charge rule, and changes affecting DACA recipients. Immigration categories which are affected by the action include U.S. citizens sponsoring family, employers, and various visa categories like diversity visas and refugees. So it's supposed to reduce legal immigration to the tune of 33% to 50% by the end of Trump's term, which is nice. Yeah, that's good. That's good. It's pretty good. It's not great. It's not solving the problem, but it's good. It's pretty good. The house is still on fire. Okay, but they did spray a little water. Okay. There is some water being sprayed. All right. And we should be happy about that because some water is better than no water. The house, still on fire. The fire, still raging, still growing. Water, not even anything close to sufficient to even putting out the worst parts of the fire. But hey, it is water being sprayed, so thank you for spraying the water, sir. We need a lot more. A hell of a lot more. When it comes to the Iran war, things are just continue to collapse. I mean, it's been how long has it been? How many days have we been in this war? February 28th, March, April, May, June, July. We're now almost all the way through August. It's been 6 months of just getting worse. The best we did in the Iran war was like the first 2 days. We should have stopped then. Do you remember me saying that? I think it was 4 days in. I was like, this is it. This is the moment where we could turn around right now and minimize our costs. But there's nothing to gain from here on out. And for 6 months, it's just been a steady devolution, a steady collapse of absolutely everything having to do with the Iran war. I honestly am kind of have to laugh at it. Because it's just like everything. Everything is just collapsed. The 60-day deadline for a peace deal with Iran is expiring. Here's where things stand. Pentagon evaluates reducing U.S. military presence in the Gulf after the Iran war. So this is the silver lining to all of this. This is us getting what we voted for just in the worst way possible. See, I voted for Trump to get out of the Middle East. I just didn't think we'd be running with our tail between our legs when we did it. Iranian missile and drone strikes exposed deep vulnerabilities in America's decades-old fixed-based strategy, prompting a sweeping reassessment of how and where U.S. forces operate in the Middle East. The Pentagon is conducting a comprehensive review of its military footprint across the Gulf, weighing a significant drawdown and restructuring of forces after the 2026 conflict with Iran revealed just how exposed America's sprawling network of fixed bases has become. It's just, we're losing so bad. It's so bad, y'all. We've been driven out of the Middle East by Iran. I mean, forget that Iran has won the war of attrition by simply not being destroyed. They are actively driving us out of the entire region. And they're very confident and they're feeling very good about the trajectory of the way things are going. They're putting out videos where they can hardly contain their smiles. And they're saying a new normal has been established. And they're not going back. They don't intend to go back. And they don't really intend to even slow down. I mean, I believe them when they say they plan to wait out Donald Trump. I believe them. How that's going to work, I don't know. Because we have 14 days of crude left in our strategic reserve. So we got 2 weeks. I don't know what happens in the next 2 weeks. But gee, I wish we'd never done this. Gee, it sure seems like we'd be in a better position now if we'd never done this. If Trump had never hit the big red destroy Iran button that was actually connected to a pack of TNT in his pants. Like that's, he's just like, oh, war with Iran? Don't mind if I do. Bang, and just his entire legacy destroyed. His entire career over. America swirling down the pipes, socialism rushing in, collapse of the economy incoming worldwide, starvation on its way. And I'm more certain of this than ever because of the stories that I'll get to in just a second and what's being discussed in mainstream news these days. But here's another just example of, again, just like the utter debasement and humiliation of America as a consequence of this Iran war. U.S. Navy destroyer adrift for 4 days after losing power. Sailors were left without drinking water or working toilets during a mission in the Middle East. A U.S. Navy destroyer suffered a complete loss of power for 4 days in the South China Sea last month, leaving sailors without meals, drinking water, working toilets, or air conditioning. The USS Binfold and its 300-strong crew had to be towed to port in the Philippines after an engineering casualty involving its generators, according to Commander Matthew Comer, spokesperson for the U.S. 7th Fleet. The 10,000-ton guided missile destroyer was sailing with the George Washington Carrier Strike Group but found itself adrift after the power cut. There were no injuries to the crew, who demonstrated resilience, grit, professionalism, and unwavering steadfastness in their response. Commander Comer said, adding the other ships in the strike group stepped up to supply meals. It was the latest incident to cause a headache for the U.S. Navy, including complaints this week about conditions on the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier, citing issues with lavatories, showers, food, and burnout among sailors who have not stepped on dry land this entire year. We had a story yesterday that apparently destroyers are running out of feminine hygiene products. Which I just, every time I read that headline or just thought about that story, I just see the endlessly disappointed face of Captain Jack Aubrey. I just think back to what the men of the Navy would say 50 years ago, let alone 100 or 200 years ago. Just like, sorry, there are a lot of problems with what you just said. The Navy destroyer has a shortage of women's hygiene products. Why are there women on the ship? I guess would be the first question. First and foremost. The second would be, you didn't plan for any of this? I mean, In a way, it's like the shattering of the last illusion, right? Because as we've witnessed over my entire life, our cities just decay and our way of life just sort of disintegrate and everything that we loved growing up just sort of becoming grayer and sterilized and offensive and objectionable. Like if we've just watched all of this go on, there was still this, like, the manifestation of America was still the military. And it was still, okay, you know, you might, living in America, you might not think that we're doing that great, but, like, have you seen the USS Gerald Ford take a 90-point turn at full steam? It's pretty amazing, actually. You ever seen a bombing raid on Baghdad in the middle of the night? They don't even have defenses. We just wreck them relentlessly. So it's like this one, like the crowning jewel of the American Empire was always the American military. And it, for my entire life, and since World War II, more or less, has retained this luster, this glimmer of power. And it's just, it's like the last illusion being shattered. It's the last part that was still propped up that we could still point to and go, America's the most powerful country in the world, and we can kick anyone's butt, and nobody can say anything about it, and we give all of our money to the military-industrial complex to guarantee that we're outfitted with the most advanced missiles you could ever imagine and the strongest men. And now it's just like, over the last 6 months, we don't have bases in the Middle East. We couldn't defend them when we had them. They were shattered by $30 drones. Our men are just like completely hopeless and making it. In fact, I don't know if we have the image or I can't remember if it was a video. It may have been a video. Where the U.S. Army, you know, they write messages on, you know, enjoy this. You're like, whatever. They write messages on, like, the missiles that they fire. And the American military is now writing messages like BB's cuck on the side of the plane. The servicemen, like, they're people. They understand what's going on. They understand that they are being sent out to die for Israel's territorial ambitions. They ain't happy about it. So even if things were collapsing and the conditions were not that good, they could endure it. They would be happy to endure it if they thought they were fighting for something meaningful and good. They're not. They're fighting and suffering and some of them dying for a bunch of ingrate foreigners like Bibi Netanyahu and Ben Shapiro. Screw them. Why should they suffer at all for these people, let alone to the degree that they're being made to suffer? And so they're the ones, you know, outraged at this and opposed to this. And now it's just like destroyers running out of steam and just being adrift for 4 days. And Abraham Lincoln is just like flooded with sewage and it looks disgusting. And they've got goy slop on the trays. Yeah, look, BB's cucks, I heart flock cameras, be a good goy and do what Israel tells you. This is what the army is writing on the side of their ship. Operation Epstein Fury. Peace deal number 64 incoming, all this for the Holy Land. I love Israel. I am a good goyim. Yeah, Israel should be worried. People should be worried. You should all be worried. You should all be very concerned about what this is all leading to. I'm not. It's about damn time as far as I'm concerned, but a lot of people out there should really take a look at that graffiti and understand that that's men in uniform who probably know that they'll be like discharged, if not charged with treason, if they're caught for writing stuff like that. I mean, you think, you know, it can be bad for a Cornell student these days saying something moderately unkind to the Jews. I mean, imagine getting court-martialed for writing BB's cucks on the side of a plane. So it just gives you a little insight into like how strongly they feel this. They're taking a risk writing that, to be honest with you. So the shattering of the last illusion, the glimmer, the luster, the unquestionable power of the American military is now basically being flushed down a toilet that doesn't flush because it's on the Abraham Lincoln. And plumbing is a little bit above our pay grade. Meanwhile, the South Korean president stresses U.S. alliance as many baffled by Trump's order to cut exercises. So South Korea apparently upset Donald Trump, which caused him to make this surprise announcement that he was substantially reducing joint military exercises, citing what was a good relationship with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korea's refusal to join the war, the U.S. war against Iran. Okay, so South Korea, our ally, won't help us fight Iran's because, and we're fighting Iran, remember, so that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. So now we're going to be better friends with Kim Jong-un and North Korea, which has a nuclear weapon, because South Korea won't let us stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. Have I mentioned that everyone is insane? Have I mentioned that everything and everyone and every decision is indescribably insane these days? Because that's what we're looking at. I honestly can't. I mean, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't it be crazy if, like, the ultimate geopolitical outcome of Donald Trump's tenure as president is Kim Jong-un takes over South Korea? Kim Jong-un defeats the capitalist forces of South Korea and installs the communist utopia of one Korea, best Korea. It's possible. Who knows? Who knows what's happening? You know, we've been at war with South Korea for 47 years. South Korea cannot be allowed to develop nuclear weapons. So, obviously, the result of all of this is total destruction of the United States, basically, and our entire political power projection project the world over. And everybody hates this. Everybody hates it. Here in America, we all hate it and are very concerned about how much it's costing us to do this thing that we hate doing, that we never wanted to do and never asked to do, and is actually distracting from all the stuff that we not just want to do, but are going to die if we don't do. The existential things that are necessary for us to do in order for our nation to survive into the future is not being done because we're doing this instead, and we're paying for it. Not just with our tax dollars, but every day at the store when we're paying more for gasoline or goods. A Pew poll has shown 56% of Americans are very concerned about gas prices in July. That concern rose 34% in January amid the Iran conflict impacts. U.S. ground beef, meanwhile, prices for U.S. ground beef have risen 23% since Trump took office. BLS data shows average ground beef prices have climbed to about $6.88 per pound in July 2026 from roughly $5.55 at the start of the Trump administration in January 2025. So that's up 23%, an absolutely massive rise for one of our staple food products. For now, that might be changing as Tyson Foods slashes 3,200 jobs as U.S. cattle herd drops to 75-year low in historic beef crisis. Meat processing giant Tyson Foods has announced plans to cut roughly 3,200 jobs as it closes two major beef facilities in Illinois and Utah amid a national cattle shortage that has battered the beef processing industry. The news came after the Department of Agriculture reported that the domestic cattle herd had fallen to 86.2 million head as of January 2026, near its lowest level in 75 years. This is the part where, as a conspiracy theorist, you ask why. Why are there less cattle now than there have been for the last 75 years? How did that happen? Nothing jumps to mind, right? Has been a mad cow outbreak. There's not a disease going through the cow population. There have not been any reason why the herd should be diminishing at all. I mean, it should be growing. Naturally, it should be growing. So what outside influences have crushed the cattle industry? And the answer is regulations and deliberate sabotage from globalists who use climate change as an excuse to limit your ability to get protein, feed yourself, or operate a society that your ancestors established for you. They are forcibly destroying your ability to get meat. Maybe now's a good time. Go to x.com/HarrisonHSmith, search climate change pitch meeting, and you'll hear in that a little joke I made about I'm not going to make a law that says it's illegal to eat beef. I'm just going to buy up all the cattle farms and shut them down so you just won't have beef on your shelves anymore. No law necessary to enforce your behavior because I control the industry. It's never a joke. It's what they're doing. It's happening right now. Tyson's Foods just fired 3,000 plus Americans because there's no more beef, because they're getting rid of it.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do, they want to silence you.
is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.